It's a pleasure to welcome everybody to this first session of 2011. So Happy New Year to everyone. We'll begin with our invitation, and it's a pleasure to be able to introduce to you Pastor Hal Hoffecker with the Dallas Bible Church. Pastor Hal has served at the Dallas Bible Church for the last 17 years. Born in Hershey, Pennsylvania, he attended college at Taylor University in Indiana. Prior to DBC, he served 14 years in the Christian Medical and Dental Association, also spent 5 years serving on the adult ministry staff of First Baptist here in Dallas. He and his wife, Vicki, have been married for 35 years and have 3 grown children and 2, I'm told, adorable grandchildren. Pastor Al, thanks for being with us. Please rise to the invitation.
They are, absolutely. Thank you, Mayor. Will you join me in prayer this morning? Holy Father in heaven, we begin this day and this meeting hour by worshiping and seeking you. For your agenda for this meeting, this day, this new year, and most importantly, for our lives. You're the creator and giver of all life. As King David of old said, we receive all we have from your hand, and from your hand we give it back to you. So we want to live in that same way, depending on you, surrendering our lives to you for all of your purposes in us. I pray for us and for this city council and for everybody who works here, the words of the prophet Micah. He has told you, O man, what is good and what does the Lord require of you? But to do justice, to love kindness, to walk humbly with your God. Help each one of us personally, this city council, and the people of government everywhere to live this way. To live and make decisions that reflect justice so that we will treat each other with care and give each other the opportunity to be able to create us to be. That we would love kindness and show kindness to others. You call us to be light and darkness. Live humbly. Help us to remember that it's not about us, but it's about living humbly before you and those we serve. Deliver us from living lives focused on ourselves, on power, political success, money, and our achievement. Help us to live ourselves as your Son Jesus, my Lord, lived. Help us to find our place with holy men and women of history like Micah and St. Francis, who did not live for themselves but followed you. Lives of justice and kindness. As we seek you with your servant Moses, I ask for your blessing on our lives this day, for this city council, for us personally, for our family and those we love. May the Lord bless us and keep us. Lord, may your face shine upon us. Be gracious to us. And Lord, lift up your countenance on us and give us your.
Mr. Bargola, could you lead us in pledge?
We pledge to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Pastor Al, thank you very much. Great work. Gone out and identify needs in the community. and really address those important requests that we try to make available. Both in since the back-to-school fair, which again addresses the needs of individual children that otherwise may not be prepared for going back to public school, and also the Task Force of Health, which is building awareness of the challenges of diabetes throughout our community, especially in the area of type 2 diabetes, and addressing nutrition, exercise, kind of lifestyle issues to try to improve the overall health of our community. Walmart has been just a terrific, terrific sponsor. Not only does the Walmart Foundation provide contributions to various charities and organizations, and that we're very thankful, but I think it's also important to note that they've been involved in education, environment, cultural arts, and they've also engaged their association with community participation, as I outlined. This year, as they've done before, not only in terms of monetary contribution, but importantly, their withdrawal of Walmart funds that came out to both of these. With the Passport to Health, we had people that were involved in eye examinations, a lot of other teachers that came from different parts of Walmart and different Sam's Club, and the Passport to Health was a great contingent of folks from Walmart that were out there, again, communicating the importance of health and Walmart's commitment to health in a number of different ways. They provided provision screenings to hundreds of low-income families, and it's because of their participation in events like this that it's important to recognize Walmart and its associates. Nikki, you've been so involved in both of those. We wanted to present to you, on behalf of the City of Dallas and all my colleagues on the Dallas City Council, to thank the Walmart Foundation and all for what you've done. So I want to present to you this special recognition as a presenting sponsor for the Passport to Health. And with that, I'm going to ask my wife, if she will, to just highlight some of the things on Passport to Health and add some of the things that you're doing.
So I just want to thank you very much for all you've done. I just want to add also to that that Walmart presented $45,000 to the I Move, I Live, I Eat program for DISC. It's a pilot program for our freshman health classes. And it was at that press conference that the Walmart executives came up to us and said, how can we help the Passport to Health program that you all are doing at the Cotton Bowl? And they actually volunteered. And so it was your executives who came to us and said, how can we help with the Passport to Health program that we're having? So you all actually volunteered. And so we appreciate your volunteer. We do not know that you all volunteered. So we want to thank you very much for, again, being a great partner. Thank you.
And Nikki, we also want to give to you the special recognition, and it's for Walmart. And I won't go through all of the different pieces of it, but I'll highlight some of the things that both my wife and I have said. It talks about the opening of the first store back in 1962, Walmart's commitment at that time to be involved in their community. They've certainly done that. It talks about Walmart serving as a guiding light here in Dallas for a number of the different efforts that I mentioned a little bit earlier. It talks about the numerous charitable contributions that Walmart made, again, to support a variety of causes. It talks about the continued legacy of a caring business that's reaching out and touching the community. It talks about the Mayor's Task Force to Help Family Fund Fest. It talks about the Back to School, both of which were citywide efforts that made a difference. And then it also, probably most important, talks about the Walmart associates. As Laura said, the fact that they came out, they volunteered, they said this is something where we can add value to our community and want to get involved. So on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council, myself as mayor, it's a pleasure to present you this special recognition. Nikki, thank you so much for everything Walmart does, but especially your role, the leadership that you've taken. You made a real difference. Thank you.
I'll be really quick. I'll be really fast. It is an honor to receive this, and I want to talk about the associates, because the associates are what makes these things happen. Yes, Walmart donates the money, but without the associates, we can't participate in the event. And they look forward to these every year. The Dallas Mayor's Back to School Fair, there's a fight to get there. They all want to come. And I'm so excited about the second event, the Fun Fest, because they had so much fun and they enjoyed themselves so much. And we're looking forward to make it even bigger and better next year. So thank you so much for always reaching out to Walmart and Sam's Club, and we'll always reach out to you. So thank you, and I appreciate the recognition.
All that Walmart does, and you mentioned the associates, and that's the key. Every time I've dealt with the associates, I have a Walmart in my neck of the woods. They step up to the plate. I can always count on them. They're always there for our community. Now, the city is what we're seeing back to school. It's an honor to stand up on the stage and see what the mayor and y'all have done. But out in my community, too, it goes deeper and deeper what Walmart does. So I just want to know my thanks.
Nick, before you leave, I just wanted to point out too, I thought it was so special at the mayor's back to school event that, and this is an everyday occurrence, that you offer the eye exam and the vision, the glasses. I think it's like $35.
$38.
I see that advertisement when I go to my Walmart up near my house, and I'm so appreciative that a company would take the initiative to do that. It's so important that our school children have good vision. And when I was in there the other day, I did go by and look at the glasses frame. Also, the results as well. They're in very nice frame. Yeah, I just think that's such a good thing to do. Such good outreach. So I want to thank your associates. It was just a ton of work to help check the vision that day.
Coming up in my district on Northwest Highway, and is, I guess, only the second store like this that you all have. This is one of your new renditions.
Yes. Yes.
So it's really going to be unique, and it's really going to be neat. And I want to thank you guys for putting it in there. Exactly. It's going to be fantastic. Thank you all so much.
Very excited as well. Thank you very much. Jones, thank you for being here. And Mrs. Leppard, thank you very much for being the leadership, the voice of what this disease does in our community. It plagues many, many neighborhoods. And we just want to make sure that all of us in our community know how important Walmart is to our community. And, you know, to make sure that all of us are, you know, are checking ourselves and, you know, that our community is better and that we make sure that we are promoting wellness in all aspects of our community. So thank you very much.
And let me add by saying Walmart's my favorite store.
Mine too.
Yeah, it is.
What do you mean?
I'm always in Walmart. I can depend on that 24 hours, but certainly to you and to Walmart and Sam, thank you also very much. Your vision, your leadership, Mayor and Ms. Leppard both. Thank you both for the leadership and dedication, Ms. Leppard, that you've committed to this project and to our mayor and Walmart. Thank you so very much. That, Mayor?
Ms. Kerwin, do you want to go down? I got a chance not too long ago to meet in Bentonville with the leadership of Walmart and Sam's Club. And I made a speech to them. My first line, however, I pointed out that I was a member of Sam's Club. The rest of the speech didn't make any difference. I got to cheer for that. I'd like to ask Steve Nagel to come up here if he would for just a moment. Steve? Steve is the CEO of the Southwest Flood Region. Good thing to see you. Thanks for being here. Throughout Dallas, we depend on the American Red Cross in so many different ways to provide the saving blood for patients, receiving care in our award-winning hospitals. We also know the American Red Cross for providing relief to victims of disasters. And a lot of times we know it in terms of the hurricanes, the large disasters that we unfortunately suffer through here in the United States and locally too. What people don't realize about the American Red Cross is that I can tell you that our police force and our fire rescue people surely do. And that is what I'll call the one-off disaster, where there may be a family that all of a sudden has lost their house one evening to a fire. The American Red Cross steps in and provides assistance at those times. It's probably not near the publicity it deserves, and clearly not as you get with a large hurricane. But for those families that are touched in our community, I can tell you, and I've seen it firsthand, what the American Red Cross does. We want to congratulate you for that. They are always there to serve the residents of the city of Dallas. We're so appreciative of that. With that, now we revert back, as we do each year, to the, quote, Battle of the Badges. And that's what we're here to celebrate today. I'm proud to support the Battle of the Badges. Now, for those of you that don't remember, that is a friendly competition. I underline the friendly part, competition, between Dallas Police and the fire rescue personnel. Each department requests each of the members to donate blood on their behalf, and also other people in the community, too, to go out and show their support of either the fire or the police department. The inaugural event was last year, and of course it was a great success. I hope we can collect even more blood donations for the American Red Cross this year. 2010 proved to be a very successful year for the city of Dallas. The Arts District was established as the cultural home of our arts. We continue to develop downtown advanced projects such as the rooftop park, the convention center, hotel. All of those are coming to fruition. In 2010, we also partnered with the American Red Cross for this Battle of the Badges competition. Again, our communities responded and donated vital life-saving blood, and I know that you put that to very, very good use. As we kick off the second year of the Battle of the Badges competition, I invite everyone, everybody that is listening, to give blood to the American Red Cross. A blood drive will be held today in the lobby from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. For information about other Battle of the Badges blood drives, you can visit redcrossblood.org, redcrossblood.org. So, with that, Steve, I want to give you this proclamation that we will declare the next week the Battle of the Badges throughout the city of Dallas. And, Steve, I won't go through all the different pieces, but it talks about the privilege of the city of Dallas to work with the American Red Cross. It talks about all of the efforts of the American Red Cross, be it the raising of blood, the addressing major disasters, or just those disasters that come in and affect individual families, but you're always there, you're always stepping up. It talks about the vital resources that you provide to our community in so many different ways. It talks about all of the efforts that you put in advancing research, especially in the area of blood donation, and the work that you've done there, and then talks about the Battle of the Badges and your efforts to kind of push out this effort to raise blood and put that friendly competition between all the great men and women, both our police and our fire department. So, Steve, with that, I'm going to give you this proclamation on behalf of the City Council, myself as mayor. Steve, we appreciate everything that you're doing. We look forward to another successful Battle of the Badges. With that, can I have you take a couple comments?
Thank you.
Steve, thank you so much.
As mayor says, this is a friendly competition, or at least it starts out that way. I'd like to thank Mayor Leppert, Police Chief Brown, Fire and Rescue Chief Burns, City Manager Soon, and the members of the City Council for your support of your American Red Cross Battle of the Badges competition for the second year in a row. With your help and with the donations of active blood donors within City Hall and throughout our community, we plan to collect the much-needed blood for patients in Dallas and throughout Texas. We rely upon the Dallas Police and Fire Rescue Departments, as Mayor Leppert had mentioned, to step into action during times of crisis. During the next week, both branches will also respond by donating blood on behalf of our community. We joke about donut eating contests and rescuing cats from trees, but as a result of the dedication of these emergency response personnel, we will now be better prepared as a blood region to provide area hospitals with life-saving blood. Thank you for taking the time to donate blood to your American Red Cross. I also want to thank the Dallas community for your unwavering support of the Battle of the Badges competition throughout the year and by regularly giving the gift of life. Thank you for being role models in our community and helping make this a fun event. Please plan to donate blood to your American Red Cross as part of the Battle of the Badges competition. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Now, I wanted to bring up the two leaders of the police department. I saw Chief Burns over there, so I was going to turn it to him, and I didn't see Chief Brown, so I thought all of a sudden the fire's going to have the initial advantage on this. But all of a sudden, Chief Brown ran in, he's sweating and everything else, but he didn't want to give the fire any advantage at all. Chief Burns, Chief Brown, can I have you just say a couple of words? Chief Burns first.
Thank you, Mayor. on behalf of Dallas Fire Rescue, we understand firsthand what it means to be a blood donor. We see the tragedy that happens in our city, and we understand that how important it is to donate blood. And this year, we're going to take on Dallas Police Department.
Oh. And I'm going to go ahead and confess I'm afraid of needles, but we are up for the challenge against the Dallas Fire Rescue, and we are hoping to again keep this rolling. Thank you so much.
I was
going to
ask you why, but you literally answered that. Thank you very much. Steve, thank you very much. I appreciate it very much. Thanks, everyone. Mr. Caraway, can I turn over to you, please?
Let me say that 1911, back in the day, there was a fraternity that was formulated, and it was called Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated. A lot of times you all hear me here at Dallas City Council nudging and pudging individuals as it relates to the fraternity that I am so very proud to be a member of, that was formed back in 1911, and now it is 2011. So we are now celebrating 100 years of Kappa Alpha Psi Incorporated. We're going to have a big, big convention, I believe in Indianapolis, in July, and I don't fly, but I'm going to the convention, and I'm not driving. So I want to just give special recognition, because it is certainly in, and it is appropriate. If you look at the pictures here of the Dallas chapter, some of the pictures of Kappa Alpha Psi Incorporated, our Dallas chapter located on MLK in sunny South Dallas. You'll see me on the end, and we have some pictures. If you go to one of our old websites, someone posted a picture even of myself when I pledged Kappa Alpha Psi at Texas Southern University, spring 72, 1972. And I was captain of the ship, and there were 18 of us on that particular line. And let me say that being a very proud member of Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity, it has endured and has strengthened and has shown me the leadership and the right way to travel. And because of the vision of people that were before me, and I'm talking about folks like Elder Watson Diggs, our key founder of Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity back in 1911, and then there were so many others. The focus of Kappa Alpha Psi has always been to make sure that we ensure leadership, that we mentor young men, we make sure that they are productive citizens, and that's a carryover, as you have seen and can attest to here at City Hall, with my concern and interest with hands-on with our children. Thanks to you, Jerry, you're an honorary member of Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity. I want you to know that. I'm here today to celebrate the 100 years of Kappa Alpha Psi with our hallmark of the Dallas chapter, Byron Lattimore, and Byron, on behalf of the city of Dallas. And I'm not going to go into all of the whereas, but this is so very important that we recognize the fact that we are doing what we were sent here, and God's plan is the plan that we're carrying out through the founders of our organization, through the 100 years that they had the vision years ago to put this organization together, and we're still introducing great young men and role models to the citizens here of the United States of America. Now, there are other clubs and fraternities, so-called. Tanel is not here right now, but he's in a little club called the Apple. And
then we have some others that are here in some clubs called the Omegas, and we got, is there another?
Sigma.
Six something. But the true fraternity, Mayor, if you're ever going to wrap your arms around a fraternity, it will be Kappa Alpha Psi Incorporated. And I just want you all to know I am peacock proud to be celebrating the 100 years of a fraternity and of a choice that I made back in 1972. And I'm going to pass out a picture because I didn't know that they had posted this picture online of me back in 1972. Now, you're not going to see it here because we said we're going to have that picture, right? Good. Well, that's a good thing. Because I was weighing about 175 pounds with a big afro, and I'm telling you, we were giving Texas Southern University not just education, but we were giving them a little capital fund. We'll say that one. But let me just present this to you and on behalf of our chapter and to our fraternity, on behalf of the mayor, the entire Dallas City Council, myself, and the mayor pro tem of the city of Dallas, Kappa Alpha Psi Incorporated, the Dallas chapter, and of course the world chapter of Kappa Alpha Psi.
Thank you, Brother Caraway, Mr. Mayor, to the entire city council. This is the highest day in all of Kappa Alpha Psi. This is the day when we celebrate 100 years of honorable achievement in every field of human endeavor. And I want to thank you again, Mayor Pro Tem, for taking time out to honor not just the Dallas Alumni Chapter, but to honor Kappa Alpha Psi for continuing the dream of Elder Watson Diggs and our other 9 founders and pursuing honorable achievement. Kappa Alpha Psi is an organization that is dedicated to supporting the cause of education, dedicated to uplifting those who need support, need help. We are really the embodiment of W.B. Du Bois' idea of the talented 10. And so we are committed, a lifelong commitment, in fact, to honorable achievement and to inspiring those within our cities and our respective campuses. Kappa Alpha Psi exists in we have 700 chapters across the country and really across the globe. So we have chapters that span all the way from South Dallas, as Brother Caraway mentioned, all the way to South Africa. And hopefully you've been able to see the impact of Kappa Alpha Psi here in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. We have 5 alumni chapters. We have several undergraduate chapters as well. And all those chapters are geared toward creating inspiration and honorable achievement. So on this day, we want to thank the city of Dallas for being a partner with Kappa Alpha Psi and allowing us to serve the city as well and help those in need and, again, create inspiration and pursue honorable achievement. Thank you very much.
Chaplains may be pretty.
You think that you're courageous enough to follow that?
Chaplains may be pretty, but alphas are smart.
Madam Secretary, if you think the morning speakers can follow that, then I'll turn it to you.
Thank you. We begin this morning with your first speaker. It's Lottie Stewart, followed by E.R. Stewart. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both walls. please allow your 3 minutes and then allow the next individual their turn. Again, your first speaker is Lottie Stewart. Please state your name and address for the record. And you may address your comments to the chair, Mayor Leppert, at this time.
Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Caraway. Thank you.
My name is Lottie Stewart. My address is 5663 Trailwood.
Is the mic on? Hold on, Lottie. Hold the time, sorry. Mm-hmm. Make sure she's talking. Okay, go ahead. Speak up a little bit.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Lottie Stewart. I live at 5663 Trailwood Drive. And I'm here in reference to Park and Rec, Stinger Hills in particular. On November, the third Tuesday in November, I was told that we had lost, or we was going to put back $1.4 million that was allocated to renovate our rec center. We have worked on that bond program since 2000, and we were under the impression that the renovation would come, would happen in 2011. Now we're saying, no, it's not going to happen. I object to that because, first and foremost, some of you were not here when we were working on this. And yes, I've been around for almost 30 years, and I've been here a number of times. This is the first time I've ever been able to be the first speaker. But I was so overwhelmed with this information that I needed to call immediately and get on the program so that I could speak to the entire council. We would like to have the renovation at Singing Hills Recreation Center because we were promised this, we worked on it, we got it through the bond program of 2000. And my question to you is, if we can't keep the grass watered at the lawns this last summer, we did not water our lawns at all. Flowers died that the council had planted. We did not open the swimming pools in the community in Glendale Park, Tommy Allen, and other public pools for our children. How are we going to be able to tear down a whole center and rebuild it? Now, our center was either bought by the city or it was built by the city. I don't know because I wasn't around at that time. But in 1972, we've already been talking about the 40-year anniversary of the 40-year celebration of our center and the things that we've accomplished over the years. So I need to know from you if my center is going to be renovated in 2011. Now, we have a young lady at our center that has been with us for probably 9 to 12 years. I don't know exactly how many years. Her name is Cassandra Rawls. Cassandra has been interim manager on two different occasions. Lamar Ambers was the manager in the last 7 years, and on two different occasions he's had some thunder. Cassandra has stepped in and we've worked. Our programs have continued to prosper, and I'd like to have that cleared up as well, making her manager of Singing Hills Recreation Center. My time is up.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
but thank you.
Ms. Victor?
Thank you. Your next speaker is E.R. Stewart. State your name and address, please.
My name is E.R. Stewart, 7022 Balalaika Road. I'm here today on two foes. One is the Singing Hills Recreation Center. We are requesting that Cassandra Ross continue to be at our recreation center because she has helped our center a lot. I don't see any reason to move her because someone else is not doing their job in another location. I know sometimes the people play nepotism in order to move their friends around so that they can keep their job. If they're not doing their job, they need to go. Ms. Cassandra Ross is doing hers. I see no reason to move her around or to demote her. My other twofold question was, People have been falsely accused so many times. Sometimes it starts with only a comment about someone in a position of power. Even though the people in hearing distance know that that particular person is not doing what that person says, but because that person in power says it, sometimes it leaves that doubt in a person's mind. In my case, Deputy Chief Scott of our South Central Police Station made a comment at my homeowners meeting in which I was willing to overlook it because we've had problems before in the past, but we might have been a little overzealous at that particular time, but for her to state in my meeting that we were drunk and she were going to have us arrested, I felt that that was going a little bit over. Now, I like I said, I was going to let that pass, but then before she left my meeting, she made another comment because I was so glad to see one of our police officers. That took me a year and a half just to get that police officer just to smile when he walked in the room. I worked hard on this young man. And then she's going to tell him that he was fraternizing. Well, I had to look up that word to really know what the definition was. And it says to associate with others in a friendly way, to mingle intimately with the enemy, often in violation of military law. Well, I did not see that that fit what she was saying. I've had problems with her in the past that I left slide, that we dealt with internally. But I feel she owes my group an apology. I didn't take it to Chief Brown because I didn't know how friendly they were. But I do feel that she needs to give our group an apology. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Mary Hassan. Mary Hassan, not present. Michael Penderhughes. Michael Penderhughes is not present. Sherry Lowe.
My name is Sherry Lowe, and I'm speaking about the economic stimulus package again, $86.7 million that the Dallas city manager and mayor requested from the state and federal funding. You all are spending $21 million on Katy Trail, but you closed our parks, the swimming pools and everything in the southern sector. I don't know if you're familiar with insidious discrimination, but that has occurred right now. And then you're giving $2 million to the trolley over here in Uptown. That has no bearing whatsoever on improving jobs for the city of Dallas. I don't see anybody getting anything from that. I mean, what type of money is the city of Dallas getting to where they would spend that type of money on Katy Trail and other parks and north, but you don't spend any money whatsoever in the southern sector? Mayor, I hold you responsible, and I hold the city manager responsible, and the city of Dallas should suffer a lawsuit for insidious discrimination due to this. The mishandling of funds and the people that's over District 7 and District 4, I hold you responsible because you are supposed to fight for us as your constituents. That has not been done. You look at everything that's been done, District 2, District 3, District 6, and District 4. They're getting more, not District 4, but District 2, 3, and 6 are getting more than any other sector in the city of Dallas. The northern sector is profiting, and the southern sector is not profiting. This is a misuse of the funds that have been given by the state and federal government in order to improve the infrastructure of the city of Dallas in the southern sector. And you all are saying, okay, the southern sector is not paying enough into the system in order to get back. That's not true. It's a mishandling, the misuse of the funds throughout the years. You all have not given the southern sector the type of treatment it should have been receiving. And the thing is this. We as a people in the southern sector are going to have to file a lawsuit against the city of Dallas for this type of action. Now, I have my MBA. It's not hard for me to read any type of financial statements that I get from the city of Dallas. It's not hard at all. So I'm more than happy to read those financial statements so that I can show the public, and I will prove to the public that the city of Dallas has committed these acts against us. And you purposely did this. But yet you want to invest, and it's like you invest in these other places.
Thank you very much.
That concludes your speakers this morning, Mr. Mayor.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much, Madam Secretary.
We continue now with approval of the minutes of the December 15, 2010 City Council meeting.
Motion, please. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary, the boards and commissions.
Thank you. Consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. For individual appointment to the Municipal Library Board, Douglas Taylor is nominated by Councilmember Hasso, and Fernando Rubio is nominated by Councilmember Salazar. To the Redistricting Commission, Mark E. Horde is nominated by Councilmember Coop, and Ruth Morgan is nominated by Mayor Leppert. Also, to the Senior Affairs Commission, Jesse Tafaya is nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. Also, for your consideration, you have Dr. Ruth Morgan is nominated as chair by Mayor Leppert to the Redistricting Commission.
Move to approve.
Second.
Move and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, order.
Thank you. Your next item is for individual consideration is number 3, authorize Dallas Fort Worth International Airport to submit on behalf of the City of Dallas and the City of Fort Worth an application for an amendment to water right permit number 3800B in accordance with the requirements of the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, including the requisite fees.
Motion, please.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. With that, let's move to our briefings. And Mr. Natitsky and Mr. Salazar have been intimately involved in the Asian American Cultural Center and working on that. I appreciate both of their roles very much on that. I know, Mr. Salazar, you may need to run out a little bit later, so let's go ahead and move that up. We'll go ahead and deal with that now. That's all right, Barry.
Council members, you'll be seeing a briefing on the planning of this particular cultural center. As you may remember, we do the planning, and then at that point, most of our cultural facilities have a partnership involved with the community. And the last one that we built, Latino Culture Center, there was land donated and part of the money raised, that's been your council policy. So at this point, we are checking off the planning box for what the needs are and the capacity and what the center should be serving. There are, of course, illustrations of what it would look like, but that is just what they are, illustrations. And this really is a small step because the next step are deep involvement with the community, determining location, doing the fundraising. So that is where we are today, laying this planning process out, and then we'll begin visiting with the community about siting and raising money for the construction. And Eric Thompson of our Public Works Department will be briefing you on that process.
Good morning.
Good morning.
There are over 300,000 people of Asian and Pacific Islander heritage that make their home in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. And that population grew at over 7% over the last decade. And as you're aware, the 2006 bond program included funding to develop a master plan for development of an Asian American Cultural Center in the city of Dallas. And just a little bit of the guiding statement that we used in developing this master plan was that we're really trying to develop a facility that would be a regional arts gem, basically, that celebrates and promotes all of the Asian cultures. And this facility, once fully developed, will be an integral component of the city's cultural arts infrastructure. Over on slide 5, this master plan was developed again with heavy emphasis on public input and analysis of that input, and then a close study of the demographic data. Basically come up with these three items bulleted on slide 5. What the needs are, and then how do we best convert those needs into space requirements for the facility, and then to have a preliminary look at what the development budget would look like and what the operating budget the facility would require. Slide seven. These maps give a little bit of an idea of where the Asian Pacific Islander population is in the Metroplex. The following slide, slide eight, zooms in a little tighter on the city of Dallas in particular. So you can see that in the very far north Dallas and over in towards the west part of Dallas, we have our highest concentration. The blues and the greens are higher concentrations, and then the more tan or brown color are lower Asian Pacific Islander population. Slide nine. Over the course of May through August of 2009, we had dozens of meetings and other activities to engage the Asian Pacific Islander population to just to get their idea of just what we needed in this facility. Because public public input was so critical in this type project, we also, beyond the traditional steering committee meetings, town hall meetings, also had other types of participation, including one-on-one meetings with some, and meetings with very small groups in other cases, to make sure we at least made the effort to get as much input from all aspects of the API population that we could. If we could skip ahead to slide 11. These are the major goals that came out of that public information gathering. The second and third bullets on this page are probably two key ones that we wanted to, or that the community wanted to make sure they facilitated interaction among the different Asian American, the different Asian American populations in the area, so that they could better understand their different parts of the culture, and so that those of us who aren't part of the API heritage would also get an understanding of just what they bring to our area. Moving on to slide 14, we tried to compile and condense all that public input from the community into the different types of space that the facility would have. You see there we have a theater as the largest component of the space, also classrooms and exhibition space, exhibit space, and for a total of over about 44,000 gross square feet. Facility of this size would require approximately 9.7 acres of land, given our current zoning and development code. And we think a facility of this size would definitely need to be phased, similar to the Latino Cultural Center, and how it was developed. Slide 15, that 44,000 square foot facility at full build out was probably estimated to cost somewhere in the area of about $22 million right now. It's important to note that this excludes any cost of land acquisition because there is no site identified at this time. Slide 17. The city has had a cost-sharing policy for cultural facilities for probably about 20 years or so now. And basically it says that the city will contribute no more than about 75% of land acquisition costs and 60% of design and construction costs.
I'll remind you at this point, too, the last several facilities we've done, those goals have been exceeded, and the private participation has been substantially higher than the council's goals. So.
Okay, so if city contribution is capped based on this policy, slide 18 gives an idea of where the remainder of that funding would likely come from. An important next step is really for the community to develop their fundraising program and a team to oversee that site selection. Process has to be undertaken. And then we also have to decide, or a decision has to be made as to how this facility would be financed, operated, and maintained, or managed. city could own the facility and operate it. The city could own it, but manage it through an agreement with 501c3 nonprofits, or the community could decide that they want to own it and operate it themselves. And any initial city funding would have to come from a future bond program.
There are cultural facilities, as you're aware, all through the city operated each different way. We do not have a consistent operating and management of the facilities. Sometimes we do all of them. Sometimes the host agency does them. So you see each one of those models in existence today.
A few minutes ago I mentioned the different components of the space that make up that 44,000 square feet. So if you look at slide 20, this is what we call a functional relationship diagram. In each of those areas, the theater, the lobby, all those are denoted by different colors here on slide 20. And they're roughly to scale. And then if you look at slides 21 and 22, they give two different examples of how those components might come together. Slide 21, for instance, is just 21 gives an example of how the site might work at a mid-block property. And then 22 shows how it might look on a corner lot. And with that, we'll take questions or discussion.
At this point, the next steps are really up to the community. If any of you remember, with the Latino Cultural Center, at about this time, there was a donation of a piece of property, so that helped in the decision process of where it was located. Then it was a good many years in fundraising. So we try to work with the community, work with the leadership that determines the timing. So that will have some impact on inclusion in the bond program, money that's actually raised in the bank, and that sort of thing. So I guess I'm saying as city staff, we step back a little bit at this point and talk to the community about taking more of a leadership role in this circumstance as the next step forward. Because the next steps are locating and siting and funding that and funding the construction.
Terrific. Mr. Salazar, would you like to make a couple of comments to Mr. Tinsley, please?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Mayor. And as I pointed out, Mr. Salazar and Mr. Tiske, I know, have been very, very much involved in this, put a lot of time into it, and I think I speak on behalf of all my colleagues. Thank you for the efforts on this.
Thank you, Mayor. First, I haven't been involved with Latino Culture Center. I can tell you that this endeavor is something that will involve a great many people and certainly will require a lot of help from the city staff. I want to thank Mary Soon for early on being not only involved in this one, but also previously in the Latino Culture Center. I think, but for the leadership of the city and helping to develop the plan and assisting the citizens and the private sector to coordinate their efforts, these three, would take a really, really, really long time to happen. I'm excited about this project. In 2006, in the bond program, I put the money in to do this feasibility study. And the reason is that as we look into the world, what we're seeing is that we're not alone. We have a lot of different cultures, a lot of communities that are here in the city. And if you can go back to the map, we're always talking about how we can the map with the population base. We're always talking about how can we enhance our city to be a global city? How can we help our economic base? What can we do to draw people to the city of Dallas? When you look at the population of where our Asian communities live, and it has all the different blue, purple, that one. If you look, Dallas perhaps doesn't have as many as maybe other cities. But what's going to happen is that you can see a convergence where we put this cultural center. You'll see a convergence of Asian communities coming into the city. driving into the city, taking the train into the city, and wherever we put the center. And one of the areas that I most favored is obviously in the Asian Trade District, where you have existing now many Asian restaurants, businesses, land available for future development, that if we put it in a place where we can have more development than just the culture center, then it will be an economic engine for that area. Many times we put centers where they're landlocked and you can't really develop anything around there. And we have available in some areas along the rail line, rail stations where you have warehouses, some empty, some not, vacant land, acres of vacant land. So this is an opportunity to look at not just developing a culture center, which obviously would be the focus, but also the opportunity to create future development, future opportunities where you can draw, for example, developers from, say, Los Angeles who've developed in K-Town, large residential facilities that also have commercial and office applications in their design, to where you redevelop an industrial area to become a magnet for culture, for business, for office opportunities, hotels in an area where there are no main brand hotels. So this is something that I think can work. And we're talking about an area right now that already, right now, generates around $70 million wholesale retail dollars per month in income for the city of Dallas. That's what's happening right now with very little investment from the city. If we coordinate our investment through the Asian Culture Center as a development process in tune with the rail line, we can certainly take this to the next level. And when you see all these blue colors, I think over time we're going to see more blue in the city, and it only enhances our position globally, where we want to be friends with, say, China, Japan, Indonesia, Thailand, Korea, India. We want to be partners, and what better way to showcase a partnership than to say, we have a home for our communities from your country here in Dallas, and we want to promote an enlightenment of education, cultural exchanges, and we have a facility where we do that so our citizens can also be able to share that and gain that understanding. So I'm very excited about this. There is interest on the private investment side for donations. I know the mayor, myself, and I think Ron has talked to some people and the manager about already people interested in it, and I think moving on to this next phase will bring everyone together to move it forward. So I'm excited about it, and I'm just happy to have been here at the initial phase, and I'm like kind of like throwing it in your laps now that, it's your responsibility now to make it happen. and I'll be at that little podium reminding you every once in a while.
Appreciate the comment.
Thank you, Mayor.
As Mr. Salazar mentioned, there's been a lot of conversation to try to pull in what Miria talked about, is that private element of the project too. We visited with a number of people, and hopefully some of those will yield both land and some financial resources to pursue it. Ms. Salazar also mentioned the importance of Asia, especially China, Korea, those areas in terms of future investment in the city of Dallas. Mr. Tinsky, I know you want to make some comments, but maybe you can talk a little bit about the importance and the link to gaining those investments, because I know you've been very much involved in those conversations, those efforts.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Salazar gave an awful lot of what I was going to say, so I won't be repetitive. But, one of the things when you embark upon these, and while I was not on the council as council labored through the Latino Cultural Center, it was a labor. And it took a long time, and it was very difficult at some points to bring consensus together. And sometimes when the general public looks at these communities, they don't realize the depth and the breadth that the community is made up of. A lot of times when you mention things like the Asian Cultural Center, people think, okay, maybe it's Korean, maybe it's Chinese, But when you dig into it, you find out that there's over two dozen different subcultures that are all part of that community, and fortunately for us, work very well together. So it becomes a challenge then as to how you, even though they're working together, you have that little bit of ownership that everybody wants to bring to the table. The importance of it to us from the city's perspective is immense. As
we go out and reach out to the rest of the world, and that's where our competition is, and try to bring business here and try to bring relocations and bring people to live here, those are the sorts of things that they want to know that the city has a commitment to provide. It's schools, it's businesses, but it's also those things that they do. I like to say that, you know, when people come here, I tell them that we work real hard in Dallas, but we also like to play hard. And you've got to have those facilities that cater to those specific communities to enable them to continue their traditions. Mr. Salazar, we'll bring you back at the ribbon cutting or the groundbreaking. You won't have to go to the podium and sign up as a speaker. Maybe we should keep it limited to 3 minutes at the podium. I don't know which would be better. But, okay.
Can we have a shovel?
Yeah. We might even get you a shovel. But the hard work is really just begun for the community. It's one thing to sit around and have town hall meetings and plan and theoretically play around with your crayons and your blocks, where you're going to put the building and how much space you need and all that sort of stuff. But the heavy lifting comes at the point that you've got to go out and raise the money. As Ms. Soon said, a significant portion of this project will come from the private sector. And we certainly expect this particular facility to at least match the goals that were done from previous ones. Compounded with the fact that we've got a tight, you know, financial situation in the world, it's not going to turn around really quick. You have a lot of things that are going to come to the table. But I think from my conversations with the community, I think there's a commitment to move this forward. I know that there was comment in there about future bond programs. If we listen to Ms. Soon, none of this will go in there because there are all sorts of other things like flood control and other important things. But, you know, I don't think that we can lose track of the fact that, flood control is not really, doesn't have a lot of sizzle to it, Ms. Soon. And we might have to put some other things in the bond program to appease some of the citizenry and get them to even vote for it. So this certainly, you know, is maybe one of those things that we need to look to getting in at least on a phase-in process. I appreciate all the work that the community's done, but now it's time for y'all. I know there's a fair number of people sitting out in the audience. Now it's time for you to roll up your sleeves and get the rubber to meet the road and try to move this thing forward. One thing, Eric, if you could get, and I think it would probably help because I almost had to strain my eyes. If you go to slide 7, well, go to 8, I guess. If you could get that redone with maybe the city limit lines in, I don't know, orange or some other color that we...
It's in progress now.
Okay, all right. I mean, had I not known and did a little looking there, it looks pretty good up there, but here it doesn't look, you know, near as good. And then when you go back to number 7, one of the things that's very important, and I think the community understands this, is that we have to build this facility within the city of Dallas. It's a city of Dallas facility. But I think we're broadening our scope and saying the community is really a regional community. And, when you look at the various colors and you see the heavy concentrations in Richardson and Plano and Irving, those are communities that will need to be served, and it will bring benefits to the city of Dallas. They will come in, they will visit, they will eat in our restaurants, they will have events. So I think that we really need to step back and look at this as a regional cultural center, even though at the end of the day it will be a city of Dallas facility. And the other thing which was in the briefing is the idea of coming together with a management group or exploring other innovative ways to run the facility with more of a private sector mentality, where it might be more efficient, might be able to get more bang for your buck in doing it that way. But the decision will be a tough one. Hopefully we can do it in a very, you know, calm and collective manner, and everybody can shake hands at the end of the day and figure out that we're going to go forward and get this built. It's an important step for the community. It's an important step for the city of Dallas. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kilway, please. Ms. Wardwell.
Thank you. This is a very exciting project, and I'm kind of new to it. But in looking at the briefing over the weekend, I did have a couple of questions. One, and actually a couple of comments. One is going, we don't have to go back to the map, but noticing on the map that the Asian population is scattered through the region, and that on, I think it's slide 6 says that there are about 300,000 people of Asian descent in the region, 30,000 in Dallas. And so I wanted to reiterate that as far as I'm concerned, this really does need to be a regional effort, since Dallas would be, in essence, hosting it, but hosting it for the whole region. I am concerned about the possibility, ultimately, of this competing with Office of Cultural Affairs dollars that we are finding to be so scarce. And so I hope that a way can be developed in the community to manage this so that it is completely self-supporting. That would be what I would like to see. And I have to say that if it can't be, I'm going to have a little difficulty supporting it. We've got so much on our plate right now with the opening coming up of the City Performing Arts Building, and we are still in severe economic straits. Well, maybe not severe, but economic problems. Dollars are scarce, and I would hope that this community is big enough and strong enough to fully support this, both on the construction side and on the management side. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Fairway.
Thank you, Mayor. And let me say that I always have to say this to get so close. One of my favorite places to go during Christmas time is out in the family area off of Harry Hines. And when you look at the area and the development that has taken place on Harry Hines in that area, it has just been tremendous. When my wife served on the city council, I can go back and recall the plans and some of the conversations that the Asian community had in planning and designing that entire area out there. And I can recall what it once was, and when you look at it now, it's just phenomenal. I say that because collectively, you all have come together to put that charge out to the city of Dallas, and it is in our eyes and in our faith, and it is a true development of an area that was just once somewhat of a dusty highway with not a bunch of retail and jobs and things of that nature, but it's there now. I'm in support of all cultural diversity types of facilities. Of course, I will be very supportive of this one as being supportive of the Latino Cultural Center. But then I have to reflect back to South Dallas, to the South Dallas Cultural Center, because through the conversations that I'm hearing, and I only charge and challenge we, the city council, that when we look at where these other cultural centers are geographically located and the things around them, we still have the same obligation, I feel, to make sure that in the area of the South Dallas Cultural Center on 2nd Avenue, that we'd be very supportive of our colleague in that area to make sure that those same types of economic vibrances and developments and things are taking place there. I'd also want to be on record to say that when we look at geographically how and where these cultural centers are located, that in South Dallas we have the South Dallas Cultural Center, we have the African American Museum, but we still have a great portion of the other part of the southern sector in the Oak Cliff area and South Oak Cliff area and Glen Oaks area and other areas of Oak Cliff and Pleasant Grove that are in need of having the same type of something. It may not be that cultural stuff, but I want to just be on record to say that there is a need to have some type of facility in those areas, because we are, and I live in Oak Cliff proper, and everything cannot just be set in one part of the town and then the other portions of the community are without. When you look at Southwest Center Mall, the Red Beard area, I'm not saying that it's something that should be in my district. I'm speaking of something cultural that's in the southern sector somewhere that would be the same hook that would generate the same type of economic vibrancy and appreciation and people wanting to travel, come in, move, and share their heritages in a particular area, so our community. So I'll stop there, but I want to be on record to take today to say it is not going to happen right now, but it should be something that should be at least on our radar and the next council that will come so that they can at least know that something needs to happen in those areas as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Davidson.
Thank you, Mayor. Steve, first of all, I want to commend you for what you've done in your district. I've won on Harahan for the Christmas holidays, and that whole area has just boomed. And you have done a terrific job on making sure that you serve the needs of your constituents, and I think you've done well. Mayor, I have a question. For council members and the projects that have happened in their district, are you going to do a presentation so that we can just see all of the projects that have happened in all of the council districts?
We can put a list together and just send it to y'all in a memo each.
Okay.
Each.
If you can,
you're talking about capital projects that have occurred in the last 5 years, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Projects, housing projects, capital projects. You know, Mr. Carraway's district, he got a large project going on. Vancilla has. I think we need to put that out there because sometimes people tend to write that there's not anything going on in anybody's district,
we'll
and they don't have any initiatives going on. So if you can just put that out there so that people can understand that there are plenty of initiatives going on in the city of Dallas and in council members' district throughout the city. Thank you so much.
Appreciate the comment. Thank you very much. Fleet maintenance director?
Our next presentation is a snapshot of a process that we're in the middle of. As we began last year, we recognized that we need to do some deep looking into the Equipment Building Services Department. It's a large budget. It's one of the budgets that's not directly public service, but supports our really critical public service efforts. It supports, most importantly, the police, sanitation in the streets and the fleet. It maintains our facilities. So we are working on that, and we are particularly focused at this point in time on the fleet operations. One of the things that I am always regret that suffers as you have tight times is the ability to spend time researching and studying and examining processes and procedures and resources and improving them. So this is a little slower, that's going a little slower than I would like, but I want you to see where we are and see some of the data we've gathered. I will caution you that when you begin comparing one city to another, you have to dig deep beyond the numbers to see what operations or policies are in place that might make a variation. We are in this process. We wanted to show you where we are. I also invited today our service center managers that are sitting on the front row and scattered through our audience. These are the guys that are going to actually, and gals, are actually going to be responsible for being sure that the police have their vehicles when they need them, that the sanitation guys are in their vehicles on the road. And I wanted them to hear the presentation, to hear your concerns. They have a long, hard job ahead of them. It involves change, and that's tough for all of us. So they've been with us a long time. I know they're the ones to get this done. So as we go through this, I just wanted you to know that Mr. McClatchy, Mr. Anumel, Mr. Berger, Mr. Cates, Mr. Cox, and Mr. Stroop are with us, and they're going to do a good job for us. And Carla Brewer with EBS, who works on the budget side, is with us too today. And I'm going to ask Mr. Turner to take you through this. We more are presenting conditions to you today and some direction about where we're going. We'll have some answers for you as we go through the budget process. I will tell you that I wouldn't encourage you to be thinking this will be a huge process of money savings. I am more concerned right now as regards our fleet is I don't want the guys that have to get the work done for the citizens not having the equipment they need. So that efficiency is where I'm focused right now. Certainly if we could find ways to save money, we will do that. But when we come back to you, I want you to know what we're going to look at is trying to do our jobs better first, and then we'll look at the money side of it. So, Mr. Turner?
Okay. And Ms. Soom just covered your introduction. I want to start on
page 6, if we could. And I also want to mention that Mr. Jack Berger, another one of our managers, has just joined us, and we welcome him. You get an overview of the department. There's a $74 million EBS budget, and the fleet division is an internal service fund, and it's almost $50 million, you can see there. Next page. 230 employees. We've talked about this before. There's a large operation with a number of employees, 7 service centers, and 1 make-ready facility. Now we look at the budget summary for the department. There's almost $12 million in the salaries and benefits. You see the next big item is the fuel budget, almost $17 million for fuel. And then our contracts with outside vendors where they provide services to us for such things as auto body repair, wrecker service, and transmission and engine overhaul. On page 10, we get a sense of the size and also the diversity of the fleet. We talk about the fleet, but it consists of everything from police cars, garbage trucks, brush trucks, all of the equipment we need to provide basic services to the citizens. An average life or years in service of 7 years, and the 5,131 units in the fleet, if we go to page 11, we begin to see a profile of that fleet. So we see there are 24 departments on the left, or at least we list that there are 24 departments. We try to show the big customers, the big internal customers. Code compliance with almost 400 vehicles. Police department and sanitation make up almost half of the fleet of the city. And when you combine water utilities, that's about 75% of the fleet in the city's fleet.
Forrest, I just want to interrupt a minute. One of the interesting things as we start talking to other cities and private sector folks about how do you manage fleets, one of the distinguishing things of our city fleet is there are very few private entities that have the kind of variety we do because we do so many different jobs. That's a challenge for our fleet and something we need to look at closely. But when I go out into the world looking to see, okay, how does FedEx run, how does other large fleet operations run, there's not as much diversity in the work they're doing as we have. So
we were to give you a few slides to continue to show the profile of the fleet, if you will. The next slide is the Dallas Police Department, 1,700 units. And again, I won't read everything on this, but we wanted to try to point out things that we think are important. All of these items on this page stress that. But there are 5 patrol, specialty bureaus, patrol being the first and sort of the first responders. And that component represents a big service challenge for us. We want to make sure that when an officer needs a vehicle that it's ready, and we strive to do that. The next page, Dallas Water Utilities, almost 1,000 vehicles, 1,500 employees, and they're working on water, wastewater mains, and just normal repair as well as water and wastewater main breaks. They drive a number of miles throughout the city. The department facilities are as far as 70 miles from downtown, and you can see at the bottom of the slide is some of the vehicles that are in the fleet just for the Dallas Water Utilities.
I want to point out 2 things on these particular slides. First, with the police, when we talk about overlapping shifts, when the police chief talks about that, he says that's good because you've got more police officers on the street, and that is good, and we're excited about that. But then what you have to think about is if you've got overlapping shifts, you're going to need more cars than if you had shifts butted up against each other. So then you have to talk about, is having a lot more police on the street worth the expense of having these overlapping levels of cars and vehicles? So it's an interesting kind of dynamic in that regard. The water department has another problem, an anomaly you might think about, is if you go look at some of their equipment, it hadn't got any mileage on it. And you're like, well, we don't need that many cars because that truck hadn't got much mileage on it. But these folks drive to a job site, park, take their equipment off, do their job, and then drive back. So they may be putting 10 miles on the vehicle in a day and not like a police car that's driving constantly. So every operation, you have to think about what's the need of the operation, what impact does that have, and those are just 2 that I think are interesting to think about as we think about how you manage a fleet.
The next department profile, there's a customer that when we don't do the job that we really need to do in fleet services, we hear it from every angle, from the citizens, from the department, from just everyone, and that's sanitation. So you can see there with 470 employees, the operation is based on routes, and these routes have to be made in order to make that service delivery. We give you a sense of the number of millions of miles that they drive in a year to accomplish the service to the citizens. Street services, again, we just point out that Streets has almost 500 units in the fleet. There are 500 employees, and they serve the community through service calls and the areas that you see there in terms of weather response as well. So this is a customer we want to make sure we're prepared for daily service as well as emergency operations and inclement weather. Park and recreation, 352 units in that fleet, and they're dealing with leisure activities at the rec centers, the parks, and so they need a pretty reliable fleet in order to be able to maintain the service level at the rec centers where when the people are not working, they're visiting our rec centers and parks. So they require service from EBS as well. Page 17 gives you a list of the things we're going to deal with next and just talk about if we're going to look for efficiencies and improvement, we wanted to go out and benchmark ourselves with the International City County Managers Association comparison data. This is a data that we use to prepare ourselves as a starting point. If we're going to get better, let's see what other cities are doing. We'll give you revenue and fleet history as well as challenges and observations. So as on page 18, one of the items I want to point out there is that we're making contact with those survey cities, comparable cities for us. We want to do an apple-to-apple comparison to make sure we're making comparisons to cities that have services like Dallas and weather and other service components that are like us. So we're going to be making those contacts with the cities and in some cases site visits if that's necessary to get a true understanding of our operation compared to theirs. You see on page 19 there where we rank in terms of Dallas, Phoenix, and San Antonio. Some data was not provided. This happens from time to time with ICMA, but we will still work with San Antonio to get detailed comparisons at their level, at their fleet, in terms of what we need to compare. On page 20, we want to show you the police department comparison in terms of San Antonio, Phoenix, and Dallas. We show the cost per mile, the 29 cents per mile for Dallas, and the 20 cents for Phoenix is something that we want to try to understand better why the difference. So we don't know the answer to that today. We're curious to find out if we're, you know, really can make up 9 cents per mile or if there's something different between our operations, but that's something we're going to endeavor to find out a little bit more about. 21, you get to see other cities in terms of comparisons to Dallas. We're in the middle of the pack there. There's one there that's kind of an anomaly, just the cost. We really don't know what's causing that, but we just found it interesting. Page 22. Again, the solid waste comparisons, we want to make sure that we're making comparisons in Dallas, San Antonio, and Phoenix. You see there the cost, and the same is with the police comparisons. We want to know more from those actual cities if it's a true comparison, but you see the data that we have there. On page 23, we thought it important to kind of just graph some of these expenditures that we're looking at here. A four-year operating expenditure compared to the size of the fleet. Dallas expenses have decreased since 2009, while the fleet size has increased. And that's something that sounds, you know, basic enough here at this podium, but when you start looking at the fleet growing and not growing the staff, then that's a challenge for us. 24. Again, you get to see the major expenditures compared to the fleet size. And the charts that you have there show the personnel points, the parts, outside repair, and also the fleet itself. We wanted to kind of get a visual of what that looks like for expenditures and also the versus the size of the fleet. 4-year history on page 25. Now, we just want to show stick charts here. The customer departments, as we refer to them, are color-coded. You see there, Streets, Parks, DWU, Police, and the number of vehicles that we've purchased over the last 4 years. We want to point out, or I think it's important to point out, that in those years where tight budgets where we've not made purchases of new vehicles, in the future we expect that to have an impact on maintenance costs, and not in a positive way. We think maintenance costs will go up because the fleet gets older and you need to do more repairs.
The other problem for the future, for the next 3 to 4 years you can think about, is when you see a big bump in that snake of purchasing, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road, you're going to have another one. So it's really a good idea to keep it smooth, and that's one of the challenges we face with up and down budgets of resources.
On page 27, we want to walk through some of the challenges and observations that we've done. As Ms. Soon said, we're at the sort of the midpoint in this journey, and so we looked at some of our challenges. And you can see there we've listed some of them, but we know that as I said before, if the units have increased and we haven't increased staff, that's a challenge for us. Another thing that we want to admit and point out is that we've not done hiring in a timely manner. So as we have people who retire or leave the city, we need to be prepared to hire constantly by being ready to hire good, talented mechanics here. Next page. I've talked about that again. We all know that if you delay schedule repairs, that's going to have an impact on service, and we think we need to do better. That's where efficiency is going to really help all of us. If we can make improvements there, that's a challenge for us. And the last bullet there, Ms. Soon pointed out, there are very few private companies that have the variety of fleet that Dallas has, but we're going to continue to talk to both cities and private sector to do best practices and implement as we go. 29, large variety, 78 different makes, models. And we're not prepared to say right now that that's a bad thing, just how do we find a way to make those models that we do have, keep them in service, and be ready to make repairs. The city auditor's report has been completed. It was published and presented to council, and our staff works on a regular basis with him to make sure that we are doing the things that he identified in the audit that we agreed with need to be done. And you see those items listed there. Page 30. So let's talk quickly about actions that we've taken so far to date and in future actions. And on page 31, you can see there the revising of the business model to focus on performance measures. We've done that in a number of departments, and now we think it's important to do that with fleet as well. Specific performance measures for each district, and really focusing on the number of PMs that are done on time. If we don't get them done on time, we should be able to answer the question why, and have continual improvement in that area, and make ready so that we can make sure that we get cars put into service, vehicles put into service, and sell them, the ones that we take out of service, in a timely way.
We want to operate, you know, this on the fleet side a little bit like we do in the police side, and the guys and gals that are sitting here at the end of every week say, did you get your preventive work done as you thought, as the goal you had to meet? Why or why not? Did you get your target repair done? Why or why not? And that's a little bit different from the way we've operated before. And as I said, change is tough. But these are things that need to be done and in order to get those fleets on the road so that folks can be doing their job.
On page 32, at the top of the page, this is something where our folks, our managers, our service agents have worked with our customer departments to expand the work schedules to make sure that on weekends, that garbage trucks and police cars are available and ready, and this is something we're proud of, the effort that has been put into this. We want to also continue advertising for positions. I talked earlier, when we have a retirement, when we have someone move on, we want to keep that position open on a regular basis so that we can make those fill those positions. We've held additional auctions. As we take vehicles out of service, we sell them to try to get all the value that we can. A lot of our vehicles don't have much value when we're done with them, but we want to get whatever value we can for them. Next page. So in the future, we're going to continue working on in this effort. We want a group of departments, those big departments that we just talked about, water, police, sanitation, and they are going to help us find a way to make better selections in terms of the fleet, the way we buy the fleet, and what is the right size, the optimal size. We want to conclude that work in July and incorporate it in the budget. Pier City, as I said before, best practices that we can streamline the fleet. Whoever has something that's working, whatever city, whatever private company, we want to do that. And we want to get a procurement manager on board before the end of January. We're actually getting applications. We're pleased by that response that we've gotten in terms of hiring for that position. Because if we're going to right-size it, we need a procurement manager that's experienced that can help us make that purchase and move it along. And we want to complete the oil change pilot program. This is something we're doing with the police cars, where an officer in selected areas just drives in, just like, you know, a private citizen, to get the oil change, and we're trying to time how long it takes for the oil change for our police vehicles and see if that works. Next.
And I want to say something about that. Intuitively, that sounds like a good idea. It sounds like the police officer can drive in and get his oil change and drive out and everything's hunky-dory. But, and it makes the police happy. But some of the other things that need to get checked when it's in the shop don't get checked. And if they don't get checked, they don't get taken care of, or we don't see a problem. So all these decisions about fleet are way more complex than they appear on the surface. We're delivering a complex set of services, and we have to figure out. And that's why we're trying to do this as a pilot. And the police do like it, and I'll warn you, if it turns out to be something we can't do, they're going to be unhappy, but I don't want to be spending more money to do something that causes us problems down the road. And this particular piece could be. Just an interesting dynamic to think about balancing all that.
So there's your summary. New management team in place. Again, we're reorganizing the department. We've moved design and construction to public works. We think that works. It's working much better for us. UL participated in the security part of the security enhancements. We had a complete review of all of our security efforts. And again, the fleet we talked about, the auditor's report, hiring a manager, customer service, stakeholders. We want to make sure we standardize the fleet. We want to make sure we get the utilization criteria in place and also have stronger replacement criteria. And we want to incorporate all of this into the budget that will come to you in the fall. Next page. And there's your appendix if you want to look at any of those items, and we are prepared for any questions you might have.
Chairway, you want to begin?
Okay, thank you, Mayor, and Forrest, for your presentation, Mayor. Just a couple of things. I was going to ask that I needed some legal information, but I guess we're okay. In purchasing the vehicles, what types of vehicle are we purchasing as relates to natural to gas?
We need to do better on that. We had a little more than 40% of our fleet in natural gas and alternative fuels, and we slipped a little bit. So that's an area I want us to focus on. Again, that's challenging because there are different maintenance and stuff, but it's something we've got to do. So we're try to get that percentage back up again.
Yeah, okay. That's something that I didn't really want to ask.
Well, some of them are harder to maintain, more expensive to maintain. So we need to balance all that, but yes, that is something we need to be working on.
Okay. And you mentioned that we're selling on page 9, I guess the auction sales on page 9.
Yes.
We're selling. The problem I'm having, and I'm trying to curtail, is how can we better control who we sell these cars to?
You're not going to be able to control that.
And the other thing is, these cars don't go until we've worn them out.
Some of them are not running when we go with them.
For instance, the police vehicles, we have standards for when they're taken out of service, a police service, but code gets them, health and human service, health gets them, or other people get them. So,
because where I'm going with that, I'm very concerned as it relates to public safety and the Crown Victoria
right.
cars that we have. Gang members acquire, and it's a cool thing for them to own it. And we've had some problems with that, and depending on how much we're getting for the car, if we're getting a fair value for the car, if we're getting a car that's $500, or we're getting $1,000 for the car, I think I'd much rather destroy the car versus put it out on the street for me personally, because it's so bad now,
right.
and then people sometimes look at these cars as police cars, and when you look
okay.
at the fact that people come behind us and late at night, whatever case is, they sometimes we think it's police cars.
Well,
we're not over-exaggerating some realities of what's happened, and I'm trying to get a handle on the coolness of my car.
I'll go make a count. We haven't bought Crown Vic for many, many years.
Well, not just Crown Vic,
so
just any type of car. And then when we do sell them, I would suggest that we paint them yellow or something instead of still some of them still have police look on them. I'm serious.
Right.
Man.
I know.
You have to really live in the areas that I live in and live with what I'm talking about and to see how this thing kind of catches on. And it sounds, you know, funny, but it's very serious that we need to make sure that we take as many of our official looking off of police car, not just the name, but the
light bar, the flashlight, the antenna.
All of that stuff has to go and then get rid of them. Because if they're not working, that's why we're leaving on that in the beginning.
We'll look at what we're doing with that concern. I understand your concern.
Now, also on page 9, we talked about maintenance and repairs. I read through the briefing that we have 7 contractors that we send our cars out to.
No, we have served 7 service centers that are staffed and maintain the vehicles by city staff. These managers that you have here on the front row, they do the bulk of the work. But there are times that we need to send work out to private contractors, and we do that. These managers here are the ones that would contract. They are very talented managers that we have on board. Yes.
And then last, Mayor, and I'll be done. Now, the average year of our cars, our turnover, we're saying 7 years.
That's right.
Okay, and then after every 7 years, then we.
But each service, each type of vehicle has a different lifespan. The police vehicles are relatively short, 3 years max, and they're not a police vehicle anymore. And we give them someplace else. That's just the average. And then we have fleet, specialty fleet that's 15, 20, 25 years old. So it's 7 is a really wide average.
And we say it's approximately $5,000 annually per car on repairs.
Well, those comparisons were for the category. So to go back to that. We gave you a breakout for police cars and garbage trucks. Michelle, could you show that slide, please? That's kind of our comparison with the other cities.
Okay. And that's fine. I mean, I'm satisfied with that.
And then we want to make sure that cost per unit is something that's as efficient as it can be. Yeah. That's part of what we want to figure out.
That's not standard for just every car.
No.
Cars
no.
May not have but $1,000.
That's right.
Certain cars, some they have 10,000.
Our new cars are like any new car.
So at the end of the day, the average is out.
That's correct.
About, okay,
that's correct.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you,
Mark. Thank you, Mayor. Forrest, you know, I guess you stated earlier that most of the maintenance to our fleet is done in-house.
That's correct.
Okay. I guess a couple of questions. You are doing a study or trying to do a survey to see how can we get the best service for our maintenance in-house.
Yes.
How far along are you with your survey or your evaluation?
Yeah, as we said, we feel that we're about midway in that process where we've taken a year to actually get those performance measures in place and work with our managers at each service center to say each week, we want to see how we're doing. Now, that's in place now. The next piece, the next step is to go look at other cities, look at private businesses who have fleets, and just try as best we can to be more efficient with what we have.
So, example, if someone come in and the problem is that if someone come in and say, here's my police car right now, and we do not have another car to loan him out, another car to him.
That's
but
right.
Then, too, we cannot determine how long that car will be in repair. Is that a fair statement?
That's fair, and in fact, that's a good point you make. We've been working with the police departments on a way to have basically a loaner program within the police department, so no officer would have a shift where they start where, you know, if that car is in for maintenance, there's another car waiting, and we're working with the police to do that.
Okay. How many different drivers drive a police car?
As many shifts as they have. There could be numerous cars that would drive a single car.
It could be 5
as many
drivers.
As 5, sure. Yes.
Okay. Do we have any maintenance guy? If I drive my wife's car, she said, well, you move the seat up too far, whatever happened, you know. So, So the key is, don't ask me, is that if you got five different drivers, are they telling the other drivers what's wrong with the car? You know, each one, do they fill out a report and say?
Each shift, when they get in a car, they're responsible. They have a list that they're supposed to check. And it's not just police. This is everybody that drives vehicles. When you get ready to get in your vehicle and go use it for that day, you got a checklist that you go through.
Okay, then I guess back to my next question. If you got a checklist and this particular vehicle comes to get service,
yes,
and you got a service rep,
mm-hmm.
and do that service rep have this checklist of all five different drivers? He can look at this list or pull it up and say, hey, this guy said it was a brake wrong, or vice versa, because what I'm looking at is that when the driver bring the vehicle into service,
mm-hmm.
you do not have a technician to diagnose the problem
right.
quick enough. You got to assign it to someone, and they got to go through it, and you don't know how long that car going to be out of service at that particular time.
That's a very good point, and I'm looking here at our managers. That's something we're trying to figure out. How do you, the best way to talk to or get information from those multiple drivers of a vehicle and understand what's happening with it? Did you hear any noises? So we want to do better at that. We don't have it, you know, standardized yet. But
I just look at, you know, from my background, you know, in repairs and automobile business, that when you take your car to the shop,
mm-hmm.
you know, the technician, he gets your car here, and he said, what's wrong with it? And he's like, get back with you in 30 minutes or a day or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he check with parts and make sure the parts are there or whatever. Then we can come back and say, your vehicle will be down for 2 days or 3 days or 4 days. And so my question back to you, Mary, is that there are some standards out there, you know, with major, major fleet operations, that the communication, you know, from the driver to turn in, the technician to service, that we can streamline the request. I mean, I know
you're working on exactly that.
Yeah, because I'm looking at it now, it costs us more money because the vehicle is not there, and we cannot replace a trash truck if we don't have one in the pool to bring out there, so we short training our customers, you know.
Yeah, that's why Ms. Nix has pointed it out to me and to all of us that right. there's no loaner program for a garbage truck. If it's down, she's got to figure out how to pick the garbage up, and we're working to make sure that we get just that optimize the fleet and then make sure that it's in service for as many hours as it can be in service. So we're working on that.
Okay, I guess my last question, Mary, is number one, who is writing the spec, trying to do the quarter control for service? Who?
Our specifications right now is a combination of our fleet managers and procurement. And what procurement department, what we really want to be able to have is a procurement manager on staff in equipment and building services to streamline that process and make sure that we get specifications for exactly what these customer departments need.
Right.
So that's part of that hiring of a procurement manager.
Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Newman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Getting used to this new technology here. Thank you very much, Mary. I'm glad you put this back on the council briefing agenda. This area is near and dear to my heart. 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I spoke about the whole issue of fleet management and that sort of thing. $50 million budget for just fleet services. What's the total? $74 million for EBS is the total. That clearly demands the council's attention, so I'm glad we're relooking at this. The fleet service internal service fund. The concept is that it has to pay for itself, correct, for us?
That's correct.
Okay, and where are we as far as the fund balance on the internal service fund?
Well, each year we close the books on the funds, and if there's more dollars that we've collected where we haven't done the service, it gets rebated back to the general fund. So
what did we do this last year?
We end with 30 days balance at least.
Okay, so our financial standards are 30-day balance?
Chief Financial Officer, but yes, that is what it is. And you might let that go if you had more space or more resources, but when you have a tight budget, we don't leave a lot in the fund balance.
Okay. So we're fine with the 30-day balance. You're saying you currently have a 30-day balance.
Mm-hmm.
And any excess that's not spent gets reimbursed back to the
department. Customer departments.
Customer departments.
Enterprise funds, general
funds. Okay. I'm good with that. How is it that the manager's office delegated to you as the assistant city manager for that particular department keeps that this department efficient when basically their costs are all shifted to the other departments in the city? How is it that you're able to create financial discipline within fleet services given that all their costs are just redistributed?
Well, they have a budget that they have to make, too. I understand, but wait a minute. When you start, you've got a certain amount of money to spend. Their money comes from the department. We spend our time looking to make sure, as we put that budget together, that that's what they need. They're not giving them an excess amount of money. And they are held accountable. It doesn't matter whether their money comes from directly from the taxpayers or it comes from the budget from the other department. They know they can't blow a budget.
Therein lies my concern. It's because we are all sensitive to money that comes from the taxpayer. And I just want along the way to make sure this enterprise fund, given that it itself is supported by the other departments, has enough financial discipline that it just doesn't pass on their costs.
Mr. Newman, they are not allowed to. Every department gets a budget that has been scrubbed pretty well by the department and by the management team. They don't get twice as much money as they need, and then they just spend whatever they want. We're not going to do that. And so there is a discipline there. Now, the other thing is, I have a concern, and I told you this over a year ago, that EBS has a large budget, and we have not dug into that budget, and that's what we're doing. And
Mary, I applaud that. So I've said that for a couple of years now,
right,
openly, nicely, and publicly, privately. Been pushing you and Forrest about the whole issue of EBS and that we should be looking further.
And we are. But I will tell you, I am more concerned when I look at the metrics, I am more concerned about doing our work efficiently and effectively because particularly, for instance, in the building services side, when you look at the metrics for other cities, we're not taking care of our buildings very well.
All right. Well, we're focused on fleet services today,
but,
so I'm going to stay focused.
Well, but I'm just telling you, looking at how money is spent does not necessarily mean you're going to find a big savings. You just got to make sure you're doing your job right.
And absolutely. And it's not my role to necessarily tell you how you should do that. I just want to make sure there's process in place. There's cost sensitivities to those dollars being charged back to the department. Because that's what it is. It's a charge back to your department. Talk to me about customer feedback. At the end of your presentation, you just spoke of customer feedback and that sort of thing for us. What's the system we have in place that the police department, the fire department, or any of those departments that rely on fleet services has a way to communicating whether they're satisfied or not?
The assistant director over this, Sherita Johnson, meets regularly with the police department, I think on a weekly basis, and the others less frequently, to talk about what your issues are. And the large fleets have somebody in their department that is responsible to identifying and concerning.
Go to the last page on your presentation for us, please. Okay, it references customer department stakeholder group being formed.
Well,
you just said, so I'm confused as to why now.
I know, but just
okay.
Wait. It's not just now. We're putting a group together that we can talk as a group. The department has been individually talking to departments for years. Again, it's an area that I don't think we've done as well as we should have done, but I'm just telling you, for the last 8 or 9 months, the police relationship with fleet runs a lot more smoothly because Sherita, having been in police before, has contacts over there, knows what their problems are, recognizes what the issues are, and talks to them on a regular basis, and the individual that is responsible holds the police officer responsible. Now, it's all well and good to talk about a police car being available, but if the guy that used it before took the car keys home to, you know, southern Oklahoma, that's a vehicle problem on the other side of the fence, not the fleet department.
No, that's a management issue.
I
understand.
No, it is. It becomes a fleet issue because then you have a police officer who says, I didn't have a car to get into, and he doesn't talk about why. So it's important.
It's a management issue.
I'm just telling you, it's important to look at all aspects of the fleet. And so that's why the bigger departments have somebody that's responsible for saying, you got to get your keys back or you're in trouble.
Okay. I'll leave that to the manager managing the human resources side of that. Talk to me about how we're bringing in private sector expertise. What is it we're doing tangibly to bring people in of expertise? Mr. Atkins kind of touched on the issue of outside expertise. How are we bringing expertise from other fleet services?
Flip to our appendix.
the people that we have working for us have good certifications and have been with us a long time.
I saw some of that.
And we are out talking. Forrest has talked to at least two different individuals in the private side about how that operates. So that's a process we're in the middle of.
And that process is going to be where I'm looking at our manager sitting here now. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this, where they're going to have to work with someone from the private side that says, on a daily basis at a service center, at a dealership, at a private maintenance facility, your customer brings a car in, and you walk away from that dealer or that repair shop with some sense of the time it takes to repair your car, the cost, and all of those components. So we want to bring someone in to assist us with just that.
And you know, another thing that happens, at least in my experience, a lot of times I get surveyed within a week. I get a phone call or something in the mail saying, what was your experience like? Did they meet your appointment? Did they meet your expectations? Did you walk away feeling like you got what you paid for and those sort of things? Now, I'm not suggesting, Mary, that you need to do that. I'm just suggesting, as I have last year, the year before, and for 2.5 years now, what are we doing in order to put as much private sector criteria in place to make sure that not only Fleet Services, but to a certain extent also EBS, is sensitive to its customers vis-a-vis how the private sector deals with it and is successful. So the feedback on an objective basis, I think in the end, helps you. I mean, all these city employees work for you, Mary, as a manager. And to a certain extent, you know, you're going to only complain as far as you can get away with it without any, I'm not saying retribution, but that sort of thing. So I just think private sector criteria helps you manage this because the costs get charged back to the department. Measurement of keeping the vehicles on the road. Was there a slide in here that talked about it? I think it saw 80%, 89%?
That's a sanitation chart.
Sanitation. Is there one that talks about police departments?
Yes, there's one. Actually, on that page, let me find it.
I'm learning that the page flipping on my iPad here, so I'm a little slow.
It's where we put the performance measures.
But, Von Till, I still miss the original paper pages, I'm telling you. I know. I'm trying to save trees. And getting kibitz from Linda here. So what slide talks about the measurement?
There
you go. Page 27. Thank you.
Yes.
I got to push my button here. Go. Two more button pushes. Okay. So 89, 89, 85, 82, 87, 84.
So you can see that we're not hitting the mark of our own established goals, and that's something that we need.
So my natural question is, and this shouldn't be a surprise to you, Mary and Forrest, what's the private sector's standard for availability vehicles?
Well, the private, we can talk to the garbage guys, but there's nobody to talk to about police. The transition, you don't have a real good comparison there.
I mean, I hear you, and I don't know what is good or bad, and you're saying be careful how to compare to other cities.
Right.
I heard you say that at the beginning, so I factored that in. So again, where do I compare then? And my fallback goes to, well, what the private sector does.
The private sector does pick up garbage, so we can certainly look at that. There's not a lot of comparative activities for a police department. So we have to look at balancing the expenditures it takes to provide 100% availability.
Well, versus, I didn't.
I know, but okay. I'm explaining. That's how you decide. You say, what does it cost to provide 100% availability, and what can we live with? And we have said we have to have 90% availability. Now, certainly at a point in time, we could look at that again and see what that balance is on the cost, but that's what you're balancing, the cost it takes to achieve that versus what you need. So,
and you're right. That continuum between 100% and wherever we're 85 or 84%, but that's why you're the manager.
We want to be at 90.
Okay, I agree. The goal is 90. So anything below 90 says whatever behavior or management practices we have in place need to be modified in order to achieve the 90. I'm all for that.
Well,
I mean,
it may say that you're not spending enough money on this particular area. I mean, there's lots of things
you
can
Mary,
say.
I'm all for it. If you sell to the council what the balance needs to be between the cost and the result. Because likewise, we have to sell to constituents what the cost of government, the cost of services, based on what their willingness to pay for it. But there's the link, what I'm trying to get at all along, is that even though this is an enterprise fund, even though it's an internal service fund, even though the other departments pay for it, in the end, the taxpayer pays for it. So, and so I just want to make sure we're sufficiently sensitive to what.
But I want to tell you and all of you very clearly, the equipment and building services and the fleet do not think of themselves as, oh, I can fix this car and charge it back to somebody else. That is not what they're looking at. They're looking at, I have this amount of budget, and I can't blow my budget.
Okay.
They're not looking at, oh, I can charge it back to somebody else, because they can't.
Okay.
They can't blow that.
My comments are the similar comments I made last year and the year before. I'm glad you're moving on this for us. I'm glad you're looking at this. I can't emphasize enough using private sector measurements. Last question is on page 8, I think it's page 8, regarding fuel. This says, I'm flipping to page 8 of my doohickey thing here. Hold on a second. It says 17 million? Okay, 16.9 million. How does that compare to the previous year's budget? And the reason why I ask, Mary, is in our FIPR report, you had given us information where you had banked savings based on the fuel. Remember, $2 or $3 million?
Yeah.
Okay, so how does this compare?
I'll need to go back and compare them. We estimate to begin the year how much gasoline is going to cost.
$17 million this time.
Right. Okay. And then if the cost varies, we hope we don't underestimate because we get in a hole. And if the cost goes down, we get a little savings. So I'll go back and look at the years versus budget versus actual for the last 5 years for you.
In the current budget cycle, though, I don't think I've seen in the FIPR any estimated savings.
Well, you wouldn't see that yet because we're just beginning this fiscal year in this FIPR. So
it's too early to be able to say whether your 16.9 is high or low.
Right. The next couple of I'm a little worried about it because I see gas prices going up, but next couple of months you'll be able to see more information on that.
Okay. Well, I bring that up just because it's before it's been something that we've utilized to plug a hole, and I'm anticipating, as you just said, that we're not going to have as much money to plug that hole this next time around because I see gas prices going up just as you just mentioned. Okay, thank you, Mayor. I'm Mary and Forrest. I appreciate you and your involvement in this. We're talking for fleet services alone, $50 million. That's a large number that we need to keep grinding down. I shouldn't say grinding down. No, make sure that it's as efficient as possible.
Thank you.
I mean that.
That is a mission.
It is. As efficient as possible. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Davis, please.
Mayor, I have a couple questions. When you sell any of your fleet, who do you sell the cars to?
Auction them off to the best high bidder.
Okay, so that can come from anybody. The bidder can be from anybody.
Yeah, if they're a vendor with us, they sign up.
So once you sell the cars, then we don't know who's buying the cars, if it's drug dealers or whoever.
Well, we know who paid us for the car. Now, I don't know what they do with it after that. We don't keep up with it. No.
And the reason I said that, the other day there was a clown, and they had, the police bumper, black police bumper on the front of the car.
No, we don't leave those.
Y'all don't.
You could get them somewhere else. Somebody could have those put on.
They can have those put on. So that's not a part of what.
Yeah, we take most of that stuff off.
Okay, so anything that that Ms. Caraway was mentioning, we make sure all that is off the car.
We're going to go back. I'm going to go back and look and make sure that we take everything that would look like a police car off, but we take a lot of it off, I'll tell you that. We'll check again on that.
Now, when we sell our car, we're talking about the cars, the vans, and all of that
we
stuff.
We sell every piece of equipment that we have that is not, it's past its useful life that we're not using anymore.
Okay. The other thing is, if we are looking at this year's budget, and we have if we're talking about having a shortfall for, I guess this is 12-13 that we'll be looking at. This is
11-12
that we've been looking at. Would you consider cutting half of the fleet in order to make the budget work, or are we talking about all the fleet to put in this amount?
I can't tell you now because I just don't know where we're going. I would never say you cut all the fleet because you can't do your service. I will tell you that next briefing, we'll start having our second conversation about the budget process in January, the next briefing we have, and you'll have an idea of where we are and what's going to happen next year, so we'll begin to look at that then.
And this briefing is based on how many new cars or how many fleet are we talking about?
I don't have any idea right now.
At this point, so the numbers are just...
Those numbers are past numbers, but not...
Okay, this is not present numbers. Okay. On page Will these, are we using the same bidder, or are we going to have to take this out to bid all over again?
On the fleet?
Uh-huh.
I don't know where the contract is, but we usually bid them every year.
Okay. Can you go to page 11, please? Mayor, and I was looking here at page 11. Now, on the is this 5,130 total unit of fleet that we're talking about?
Yes, this is combined fleet for city.
Okay. Now, and I was reading that these cars only last up to 7 years.
It's an average, yes. On average, if you combine the entire fleet together, on average, mm-hmm. about 7 years, yes.
But we have vehicles that are 20 plus years old and vehicles that we use for 3 years. I mean,
and I guess what I'm asking, for those cars that's really in bad shape, do you just kind of do your department head go through each department and pick those cars out that that's in really bad shape to say, okay, Mayor, we need, for code compliance, we only need 10 new cars? They just don't do it just because the money is there.
No,
we need
absolutely not.
30 new cars.
And they've got to justify, and they've got, and this is the one thing that we're talking about, a procurement manager, talking about what do you really need in the way of that car to get your job done.
Okay.
How many cars do you need? What kind of features do they need? You know, we don't want to be buying stuff we don't need.
Okay, so you make sure that's clear.
Yes.
And because, you know, even though we're talking about the fleet, even though we got 5,000, I just want to make sure that your department head is just not saying, well, we need.
No.
And it might only be a sanitation. It might only be, what, 3 cars, and that's what we're going to purchase,
yep.
right? And so this breakdown might say that we might only really buy 130 cars.
Well, we'll probably buy more than that.
I'm just giving out a number.
And this is the total fleet that we're using right now.
Okay.
The other thing is about 400 or 500 of those, or 300 of those, I think, are things like generators and
trailers.
Trailers and not actual vehicles. It's about 4,800 real vehicles.
Now, and I want to ask this question because I know that the police department buy horses, but that's not considered as a fleet.
The trailers, there's
well,
some specialized vehicles for the mounted unit. Yes.
Right. Okay. On the horses now. What now? Nobody never talks about this, and I haven't heard you mention this. How much does it cost to purchase a horse?
A lot. But we get some donated. We'll get you the detail on all of that. We get some donated. They have a lifespan too, and they go out to pasture. There's an item on your agenda coming up for a farrier, and that's the guy that clips their toes and puts on their shoes. So I can get
you. Have to.
I'll get you those numbers. They're interesting numbers.
Because I've never seen you talk about the horses, so I just wanted
I'll
to ask. And the canines, those are the dogs,
yep.
right? The canines?
Yes. Canines are
and we have to pay for those as
yep.
well. We have
Unless
to pay
somebody
for
them. Donates them to us.
Okay. Okay.
Ms. Davis, can I point out
mm-hmm.
one other thing before you leave page
mm-hmm.
11?
Mm-hmm.
Just because code is at the top of the list with 347, let's use that one as an example. Of those 347 units, what we want to do in the future is have that department make sure that the vehicles that are needed to travel,
mm-hmm.
if the majority of those vehicles are for one code officer to travel throughout the day,
mm-hmm.
then we think it should be the right size. So if a compact car, low
mm-hmm.
mileage is what's needed.
Okay.
Then how do we best transition from a sedan or a pickup truck or something heavier into a lightweight alternative fuel vehicle as best we can? And so I want to use that as an example before you leave that page.
Okay, and so you guys will go through that.
Yes.
And the other thing I want to say, you know, this year, we talked about some of the sanitation trucks not having air conditioning. Have we resolved that issue?
There will always be some that the air conditioning isn't working in, and we've made a special effort to get it working, but got a big fleet, and cars are going to be broken sometime. We're getting an effort to get them in, get the air conditioning going, and just not have that as an ordinary thing, have it as an extraordinary thing. So.
Well, I would like to see, if we have said 30 trucks, I'm just throwing out a number, I don't know, that the air conditioning is not working.
No. I got that number.
Well, okay.
I'm just telling you, I can't say to you on any one day everybody's air conditioner is working, but most of them are going to be working. We're going to see to that.
Let me say this. For those trucks that you know the air conditioner is not working, we consider buying a new fleet of those trucks.
No, probably we fix the air conditioning. Those are very, that's very expensive to buy a new garbage truck.
Okay, so hopefully we won't have anybody else coming down here saying that the air conditioner is not working.
I can't guarantee that, but I'm working on it.
Okay. And on page 12, I'm down at the bottom, Mary, on 12. So I was looking at the average that they drive per year. That's
yes.
The average that they drive per year.
Yes.
And this is that's a lot of mileage. Mm-hmm. Do we look at anything else to kind of lower that per year? Like, do the police officers do the horseback? They do the bikes as well, right?
Oh, I suspect those are just the vehicles because that's what we get mileage off of.
Okay, just all of the mileage.
Bulk
okay.
of that 24 million miles, again, is in patrol.
Mm-hmm.
And,
all the patrol.
The bulk of it because that's 5 units, 5 shifts, and they travel a lot of miles every year, yes.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Ms. Hunt, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First, I wanted to follow up on something that Mr. Newman had talked about. Private sector comparison.
Yes.
And what I was mainly interested in is whether the private sector uses internal mechanics, if they have a mechanics force on site, or if they outsource that.
Well, there's a mix. There are some companies that I've talked to where they privatize. They don't own their fleet. They lease it. There's some that have private contractors that work on their fleet. So it's mixed.
Have you seen greater efficiencies with either model?
We're not. We can't quantify that yet.
Okay.
We're looking into it. The city has, had effort to privatize. That didn't do well for us. But again, we're not going to leave anything unchecked. We're going to go back through that again and see if that's the right model
okay.
or some mix.
And what did you see in relation to the cities that you're comparing to? Did you see a similar diversity in outsourcing versus in-house?
We see a lot more outsourcing in the northern cities with their maintenance. The mild climate cities have city staff doing this work, and there is some movement toward trying to find some effort to lower costs. Privatization has been one of them.
And so this is an ongoing study that you're doing?
We hope to conclude this work by the budget to determine if we're going to move forward with a model that says city staff will maintain these vehicles, and if that's going to be our business model, then we need performance measures in place, and we need managers held accountable for those standards. We're saying to you today that's our approach. That's where we're headed.
And you'll look at, that's a private sector, that's part of your examination, or it will be going forward? Because I think I've heard some interest from
yeah, let me,
council
let me
members as well.
Briefly say what we want to do in terms of using the private sector. We want to hire, and we're working with a few companies and consultants that would do that. We're not going to privatize it. We want to say, what elements do you use at your dealership or at your maintenance facility to hold your service staff accountable? What managers do you use? And any of those that we can incorporate into our manager staff, we do that right away. If there's some elements that we can't do, we just won't. For example, a loaner car. If we can't afford to have a one-for-one loaner car, we just won't do that. There are things like the survey that we think is important. We want to do that.
And processes, I mean, you're not just looking at accountability, but you're looking at processes.
We're looking at processes as well.
Okay.
For example, our facilities don't have, aren't retrofitted to change oil the way Jiffy Lube does it. But we're looking to see if we still can meet that 30-minute oil change time without that. How do we do that? That's what we need help with. Because there are dealerships that don't have that as well, and they manage to do it in 30 minutes. So we're challenged to be as efficient and as effective as we can be with the $50 million that we have.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple of questions, I guess. One, as I go through here, on slide 8, of course,
you talk about capital outlays. I'm assuming that that's capital equipment you're using to provide the services.
Yes.
What is the total capital outlay for the cost of the vehicle that EBS uses?
It's considerably higher, and it's not included in these dollars.
Well, I think that's an important number, because what I think we ought to be looking at is, and I know Ms. Sue's gone, so she doesn't care. Anyway, Forrest.
Yes.
You know, and I know this doesn't apply in an applicable way evenly across our fleet, because we've got a heavily commercial fleet, we've got heavy trucks and diesels and all kinds of other stuff. But if you take, for example, the federal government's allowance for commercial use of the vehicle as a deduction of 54 cents, which I believe is the current number, that includes the cost of the vehicle, your fuel, your insurance, the total cost of ownership to drive a mile.
Okay.
And I'm going to preface this. I know it doesn't apply to a lot of the vehicles that we have. But if you take the fact that we drive about 40 million miles a year, okay, and just throw 50 cents a mile at it, which is maybe not the right number, you end up with a $20 million total cost, at least according to the IRS. Maybe we believe that, you know. Anyway.
Right.
But here we're spending $49 million on fuel and service and maintenance, and then we have an additional cost for the capital cost of the vehicle.
That's correct.
Now, I couldn't find it in here. Maybe if you could break some of this down, it would be a little easier to do some comparisons. But, for example, we've got cars that are just driven around, you know, for employees to go do things. I would imagine those get the highest miles per gallon and probably maybe have some of the least maintenance issues. Then you have your police cars that are, you know, driven hard and so forth. And then you have all of your heavy-duty equipment, which probably doesn't get very many miles per a gallon. It may get gallons per mile. I don't know how it really works.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm prefacing all this by saying it doesn't really apply, but the variation just seems so huge here that...
I think what would be interesting was to be looking at parts of the fleet that operate as nearly normally as you could think
well,
of.
That's
it.
What I'm saying.
Because certainly in the heavy equipment, there's no use looking at that way. But we'll think about doing some of that analysis. That's been the interesting thing about this project. As you dig into it, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. And then when you come to a conclusion, you have to stop and say, does this work this way on this particular fleet? So we'll do some of that analysis. I think that'd be fair to do, particularly not on the police cars, but on the maybe housing, maybe those kind of cars.
Well, and the other is,
maybe code.
If you take just the total miles driven and the total gallons purchased, you end up with a miles per gallon of 5.8 miles per gallon. And I understand that you've got a lot of heavy-duty stuff, but it would seem to me with the vast number of cars that we have that, at least with the information here, that's a very low number.
We can break it down, but I don't think so.
Okay.
I think we're...
So that answers my question on slide 20. On 29... I agree that you need to look at the 78 different makes and models that we've got.
I know
some of them are going to be one-offs, and you just got to have that one strange truck. But it would seem to me that we could probably have a lot more economies, both in purchasing and ease of maintenance, by having the same vehicles going through the system.
The difficulty on police is that the manufacturers don't stay in the business, and the manufacturers change, so I get a bunch of different police cars, and a couple of years ago we sued one of them, so now we can't buy them, so it's a challenge. But clearly, like Forrest said, I can't tell you that 78's wrong, but I'd sure like to know if it's right, because that's a lot of different repairs and types you have to deal with.
Okay, one other question and a comment. The North Central Service Center, of course.
Yes.
Now, what takes place there? Takes place in each of these, North Central, Northeast, other than the make readies and the, you know, the heavy equipment ones?
The North Central is the easiest one to start with. It is a smaller facility. It doesn't have all the infrastructure that the others have. So we operate a program up there where we do work primarily on police cars, marked squad cars, and we're going to continue that operation.
The officers will not be shuttling their cars over to Northeast to get the oil change.
They will not be shuttling their cars for anything, oil change or any of that other stuff. We want to have that facility remain open. Now, I will point out that the performance measures for that one will be different than the others because it's a smaller facility and a focused, more focused service product.
Okay. Yeah, and I think it's very important to look at the total cost as you dig into this, the total cost of what I'm going to call ownership of a particular vehicle. That, to me, would be the benchmark because leaving the capital cost of the vehicle out is just doesn't make sense, at least from my perspective.
You're right, and we're going to give you more analysis on that. One thing we want to point out when we bring it back is that on our capital side, we do cash purchases for police cars. We have debt for garbage trucks and water utilities. So we want to get the acquisition cost and the debt service component and bring all that at one time. So.
Okay. And last, I know you talked about it in the beginning, but you know, I think it's very important to benchmark ourselves and get the metrics against other cities and what they do. Yes. But I think it's very, very important to benchmark ourselves against the private sector. You know, people like the Hertz's and the FedEx's and the UPS's. Each of them runs fleets of trucks that and cars that I'm sure we could segment out that would be a comparison to parts of our fleet and see how those, you know, what it costs to service the car on an annual basis. What I mean, especially if you think about the rental car business, they look at total cost of the ownership of the vehicle and they're by the day renting it to you. And giving you X number of miles, and you're paying for the fuel.
Pay for the amount of the car you
right.
use.
And,
right.
And at the end of the year, they want to make money on your rental of that vehicle. The same way there are rental companies that do heavy equipment. Now, maybe they do or don't do, you know, garbage trucks and boom trucks and things like that. But I think at least that would be a start to see how we're best managing it. I believe that we can probably do as good a job as the private sector internally, but we need, you might say, that pressure or that incentive to make sure that we do it. And the last thing is, using the word incentive, have you thought about, you mentioned, Mary, in several times in response to Mr. Newman's question about what's the incentive for them to do better? And you said, well, the incentive is they can't bust their budget. But is there anything internally to incentivize them as a department to do better than budget?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I'll take the yes. That's fine. You don't have to explain it.
But understand. Yeah. But understand when you say that and these guys hear that, they think that you might mean I should pay them more. That's not. That's,
I didn't define. I didn't define what that
okay,
was.
Okay. Well,
but
I'm just translating. I don't want to hear what I go out of
well,
here. Mr.
You know,
Chinsky said pay us more.
You know, I didn't say that you shouldn't either. At the end of the day, if it costs us, if we can save more money than it's what it costs us, we're heading in the right direction.
We are looking at an incentive model, so just that's something we're exploring.
Okay. Thank you, Forrest. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. A couple of things. First, there's a lot of talk about managing cost per mile. I also noticed on slide 20 that for whatever reason we have significantly more vehicles than San Antonio, which is a comparably sized city. So are you also looking at absolute numbers of vehicles?
Yes, and that's one of the reasons why I said earlier that we think it's important to go on site and try to get up close and find out, you know, it seems to be the same size city.
Right.
What's happening there? So
what
we
are
want
they
to
doing?
That.
Or what
my
are doing
my here? Guess is that the water is not included in that because the water is not part of the city. So.
Well, there may be just one.
Yeah, but that'd be my guess because that the water company, the water provision is not part of the city structure there. So
okay.
That's about.
When we do auto auctions, where do those funds go?
The funds are deposited into the fund of the department that purchased. So if there's a water sale of water vehicles, they would go into the water fund, and any other general fund would go into the general fund.
So if an auto is sold from the police department, they get that
no.
money
that,
back?
That's the general fund. That
no.
would be.
Okay,
the
general
the
fund
general
gets
fund.
The money.
Right.
Okay, that would make more sense
right.
to me. On slide 29, I wanted to just kind of laser in on the city auditor's report.
Yes.
That was just released a few weeks ago.
That's right.
And can you tell me, was there anything in there that was a surprise to you?
No, I see Mr. Kenton is here. There was no surprises. And that audit, the manager agreed with all the recommendations, and we work with his staff to try to get them corrected.
So this is kind of folding into everything that you're doing?
Yes, his audit started during the period that we were reviewing some of the work. Some of the items he found that we didn't know about, and we incorporated that. Some we did. So we're working with his office to make sure we get those in.
Okay. And then could you say a little bit about the Fleet Focus database system? What is that, and what does it mean that it's underutilized?
It is a very robust database that's used in the industry to keep track of maintenance and repair of a fleet. And by underutilizing it, we're not getting as much out of it as we purchased. We should be able to use that where our managers have a sense of when the vehicle is due for a PM and be very proactive with those customers to get the vehicle in. So, in short, it's a good quality product, and we should use it better.
If I'm understanding you, its purpose is to track each individual vehicle?
Oh, yes.
That's what it's for?
Yes.
This is the area when we talk about change. When you put in new software or new management tools like that, somebody has to, initially the reaction is, well, I don't have time to do that. I'm turning a wrench. Or I'm helping supervise people that turn wrenches. And understanding in the long term that kind of use of your time benefits the whole is very critical.
That's all, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
We buy a fuel purchase once every 3 years. Is this on 3 year purchase?
I can't remember if it's three or annual. I think it's our fuel purchase is annual. Do you know, Jean?
Okay.
Pardon?
Contract.
Yes. But is it 3 years? Okay.
Okay, well, let's find that out. And then I know at DART they get a hedge against that, so you might want to look into that, especially if you think that fuel prices are going to go way up, which we do think that they are going to go up. Let's see here. I know that sanitation does their repair of their sanitation heavy equipment out at the landfill site. Right,
landfill equipment's done at the landfill.
Right,
yes.
Right there at the landfill. We got that briefing not too long ago.
Yes.
Might be interesting to compare their customer service happiness or not with what you're going to do right now as far as surveying your customers. Okay. They seem to be doing a pretty efficient job out there, but it's the proximity of which, you know, they can is probably helping them out. Mayor and I were just talking about the number of vehicles you have in your fleet. I'm sure you'll be looking at standardizing some of those so that you don't have 78 different kinds of makes and models. That always is an indication that you're dealing with, because you're dealing with so many, you're going to have more challenges.
Yeah. Just don't know whether that number is right or not. We're
right.
Going to look at it and see.
It may be
absolutely right, and I hope we can cut it down.
Right. But that is really not the point. The point really is that you have models out here.
Right. The maintenance is easier, yeah.
Do you still have, could you give me your inventory of fleet to see how old some of your diesel trucks are? I would hope that we're not using older diesel trucks still within our fleet, because happened to mention that some of them could be 20 years old. If we have that, we need to get rid of them. That doesn't meet our air quality standards. Plus, we can get money from the COG to help
not,
get rid of them.
I wasn't especially referring to diesel, but some of our larger stuff may be. We'll look.
Yeah. We want to really set a good example there. And let's see here. I've got any more. Oh, I have one more. Later. I thought I had one more, but I guess I don't. I do appreciate you bringing in the staff. I would commend you for that. I commend you for that. And also, I would say that if we have other briefings that you think that your top staff or your staff that is directly involved in the briefing or would gain something from listening to the briefing to bring them in, because I think, I don't know if it's been beneficial for the people that are here today, but I think that it's helpful for them to hear the conversation about how concerned we are about this
issue.
That's why
they're here.
And maybe they have just gleaned some information. You might want to interview them afterwards, glean some information that they might be able to return back to us as far as efficiencies go. When you do go out and look and inquire from some of the large fleet managements, you will automatically, as you know, because we've been through this before, get inquiries about, do you want to privatize your fleet? I do not. We've been through that whole discussion before. For those council members that are newer, I don't think we need to have that discussion again. But I do think that you do learn a lot from fleet management as far as going out and interviewing them, and you might want to. AT&T has the largest fleet in the state of Texas. It just seems back to the way I learned when I was down doing some lobbying down in the state legislature. So you might want to ask them. They have all different kinds of vehicles. So you might, and I think they're probably pretty willing to help with it.
Okay.
I applaud you, Mary, for bringing this back. It's very complicated. Your inventory part, your parts and inventory. I know I've said this before. Where DART found one of their greatest efficiencies was parts and inventory. They had parts and inventory that were way, 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 way out of date, could not be used in their vehicles not only to standardize them somehow or another, first in, first out, and also to computerize a tracking system. And we've discussed that before, how you're doing that. So maybe you would like to visit with me a little bit about, you know, if we're able to do that effectively, like you said that we were, but I would kind of like to know that is a huge part of it. Parts and inventory and tracking parts and inventory. It goes back to the fewer number of models of vehicles, the fewer number of parts and inventory you obviously have to have. So, thank you, Manager. I appreciate really bringing this back.
Thank you, Ms. Hamilton. The fleet management, that's a huge operation. We've got a lot of assets that are out there. I remember reading, I think it was last month, we had 10 computers that were stolen. From cars, police cars, $56,000 worth. They've been in the yard for approximately 5-6 months or so. Has anything ever come of that?
That is being investigated by the Internal Affairs Division. We don't have a final report, but we will look forward to it. And in the interim, we've made sure that when a car is in a wreck, that we take all of the computer components, try to lock the vehicle as best we can. In some cases, you're not able to lock the vehicle, but we want to make sure we have all of the items protected, so we've taken steps to do that.
Safeguard the asset.
Safeguard the asset.
Safeguard the asset. All right, thank you.
Ms. McConnell, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've got two questions and a request. On page 29, the insufficient number of auctions per year, the auditor, this is his observation. What are you looking into? How many auctions do you have a year? What are you expecting to have?
Right. As part of his audit, we concur with him in that we were just having one per year, and so far we've had three. Sharita, is it three? We've had three. We hope, we want to have it to where when make ready is more efficient, as soon as a vehicle has been taken out of service and it's no longer valuable, sell it as quickly as possible. So if four is the right number, six, however many auctions it takes, that's how many we want to have. I'm sure you agree with that.
Just a follow-up to that, then, the four or the three additional to the annual one, was this after his audit?
Was that after? It happened before he released the audit, but it was something that he pointed out in the audit that we agree with.
Okay.
We should have more auctions and get value for those assets quickly.
Okay. On the fleet focus database system being underutilized, I had a question. If, say, and this may not make any sense, but if you had a department that maybe didn't use the car as much as another department with similar cars, would it make any sense to then switch them where maybe one department, you know, will have maybe a higher mileage one, and so maybe you could save
the life of the other.
No, you're correct. That's something that we will benefit from by using this system better. If there's a vehicle that is low mileage, and it's low mileage for no good reason, we should either take it out of service or put it somewhere where the need is. So you're correct.
There's still a need for it, but they don't maybe use it as often as that department. And then my request, Mayor, if we could introduce the service managers and maybe what areas if we could do that.
Why don't we do that at the end?
Thank you, Mayor.
Ms. Kay, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I think most everything's been said for us.
Okay.
I have a couple of questions on finding out the problems with the car. The people that are running those automobiles, they come in and put out on their list, I had this problem with the car. Is there a way going straight to the managers with that vehicle where you can go through the computer and they can just automatically pick that car up and put that problem on a list so that when they get that car, they've got the history of that car. And if there's three or four items on there, they know exactly where to go and what to fix. And I'm wondering if we have that capability of going straight to them instead of going through channels to get to them the problems of the vehicle.
So the short answer is yes, we do have the capability. And that's part of what we've been working with this group on is what's the best way to do that. And we find that private service groups may be able to help us with that. So we're working on that. That's something that we'll have implemented before the summer.
I can be a lot of help and probably solve a lot of problems quicker.
Yes.
Now, and do our managers have the staffing to take care of all the maintenance of our fleet? And if so, that's great. If not, is that costing us a problem on maintenance and not being able to do our job?
Well, that's one of the points we wanted to make in this briefing, that this department, like others, has had budget cuts. So we have reduced staffing in some areas and not hired. But we're not ready to say that 230 is not the right number. We think, first, with the 230 employees we have, let's be more efficient and get those goals back up to 90% for police and for sanitation, and then determine whether that we need additional staffing or we're at the right size.
That's what I'm getting at. If it's costing us money because we're short-staffed, or it's not, I mean, we're doing the job we need to be doing.
The manager proposes her budget for the next year, we want to have
exactly.
That.
And then I want to know, and Ms. Coop brought it up, are there actual funds out there at COG to turn diesels in and get new vehicles?
Yes, there is money at COG for diesel moving to CNG. We want to make sure we have the right specifications on the engines that we bring into the fleet. Because in some cases, compressed natural gas vehicles increase our maintenance costs.
Yeah.
So again, before the budget's presented for next year, we want to make sure we're at the right size for the diesel, compressed natural gas, and gasoline.
Well, they'll swap diesel out for natural gas, wouldn't they?
Yes. The issue is making sure we get, as I said, the right specification on the CNG engine.
Well, I want to make sure we get it before somebody else gets it.
We'll work to get it in line first.
Okay, thank you for the job you guys are doing. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Kinnane. Of course, thanks very much. And I know it's a tough subject. The only thing I'm going to mention to you and reinforce a couple points that were made. One, as Ms. Coop said, the 78 is a very difficult number to work with. I mean, my sense is that all the numbers that you've gone through, and there is no shortage of numbers in the presentation, if you could have that, you would save a lot and lots of money for our taxpayers. Because, again, just, you know, it's different people, it's different things, training them on how to repair things, it's all the parts inventory, all those sorts of things become a big issue. The second thing, I think, and you touch on it, there was a couple of numbers that were in here, but I think that becomes the most important one, is just the availability number. And you pointed out in the presentation that it went down and you identified some reasons for that and then hopefully is moving in the right direction, that sort of thing. But I'd really like to see some more kind of availability numbers of just of the total fleet, how often is it available? I mean, clearly we'd like to have it available 100%. It's not going to be. It's going to come down for regular maintenance as well as other maintenance that just comes along.
But those sorts of kind of metrics, I think, would be helpful and really drive, because in essence what you're doing is trying to leverage the asset that we have. The more that's in place, the more police vehicles that are on the street, all those sorts of things, it reduces additional purchases, reduces the cost of the existing asset, all those sorts of things. So those are the only two things I'd point out. And Mr. McDonald raised it. Would you like to introduce the folks
here? We have a microphone here. Thank you. So I want to get it right.
Why don't you just introduce them? I think just introduce them would be terrific. James, thanks. And Wes, why don't you, we'll just go back. Your area of expertise in the area that you're involved in. Oh, I'm sorry. Terrific. Thanks, Reagan. Thanks, Jeff.
Things you want to tell your district?
Terrific. And I think I speak on behalf of all my colleagues. We thank you for what you do. I mean, as was indicated, there's a lot of money that goes into this. It's a big, big issue that we've got. The more efficient, effective, successful we are in this area, the more it kind of permeates the success of kind of all the operations of the city. So we just appreciate each one of you being here, as well as the work that you do on a day-to-day basis. Morris, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Our final briefing has to do with the sanitation fleet and the GPS. As a little bit of background, this was approved back in February, and we asked for an annual review of where the system stood and hopefully the efficiencies and effectiveness that we've realized versus what we anticipated at the time that we approved it. Mary?
Perfect introduction. Thank you very much. Yes, it was February of 2009 when Council approved a contract to install GPS, Global Positioning System equipment, fleet-wide in sanitation. And we at that time had discussed with you all that the 70-truck pilot that we started indicated that this was going to be beneficial fleet-wide in our department and that we expected savings in addition to better customer service that would warrant the value of spending that money. So now it's time to tell you how we're doing. Well, after you approved the contract in February and we got it signed, we began installing all the equipment on our 400 units from June to September. And we spent some time training all of the supervisors and managers who would be using GPS on a daily basis. And then we got them started using it. So how are they using it? Well, pretty much they use it every day. They verify where their reports are on a day-to-day basis, their route drivers. Any one supervisor might have 5 to 16 route drivers to keep up with, and there's just no way you can know where 16 guys are at one time without this kind of a tool. And so it does help them with that. In addition, they're able to get weekly reports and daily reports on how much how many gallons we're using, how many miles we're driving, that sort of thing. Let me show you an example of what that supervisor might look at, say, 8 o'clock in the morning. Now, by 8 o'clock in the morning, the drought driver, and I'm going to show him, he's going to start out here at this Northwest Service Center. By 8 o'clock in the morning, he's already on route over here on Aldelia Lane, and you'll see this green bar down here tells you his activity by time of day. So the supervisor will say, okay, my route driver got up, he's on his route, he's where he's supposed to be by 8 o'clock. He's on the route for at least an hour. Then he looks at it again at noontime, let's say. And by noontime, you can see that the route driver's gone up and down the streets all through this area and, in fact, has unloaded his truck one time at the Fair Oaks Waste Transfer Station and is back on route. That lets the supervisor know the progress of that route is appropriate. On this next slide, you'll see here's that same noontime chart, but now he can drill down to see has he gone up and down every single street and alley that he's supposed to do on that route. And looking at that lets him know ahead of time whether he's going to get a call from a customer saying, wait a minute, you missed me here on Cinnamon Trail or Cimarron Trail. then the supervisor can respond back saying, oh, no, the route driver's about to be there, or, no, I see he's missed him, we'll send him back. And that way our customer service is really improved. Let me take another look at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Now we see that the driver has just about completed all of his route, and the supervisor uses this information very effectively because now he can say, is this guy finishing on time? We usually want to finish our routes between 4 and 5:30. If he's finishing around 3 or 3:30, then the supervisor may reallocate this driver to another route where perhaps that driver's behind because of mechanical difficulties or something else. Let me show you another example that what our supervisors can do. They can look at multiple routes at one time. This is the Southeast Service Center at this location, and our drivers are, this is 4 different routes you might be looking at one time. And ultimately, these 4 guys, it's kind of the 4 different colors, different routes that are being run, will send the drivers in all their direction. I see Catherine's trying to make the animation work. But ultimately, all 4 of them will go and end up down here at the landfill and then back. And it's coming up. I'm sure it's about to go. This little green bar down here also gives you the time frame. So at 6:52 is when the first truck is turned on and is ready to go. Hey, there we go. There's the dot race now. Here's the dot race. Here's 4 different vehicles going to their 4 different routes. And so the supervisor can look, say, at noontime at what that progress is, and he watches them completing their routes, and as each one gets further and further within this neighborhood, he knows that somewhere around about the 10 o'clock mark, they'll have a full truck and they'll be heading to the landfill. And if he sees that somebody is not heading to the landfill at that time, he's on the radio to find out what's wrong with the truck. So here we are approaching 10 o'clock. I'm about to see one of our trucks heading to the landfill. I'm sure it's going to happen. Oh, there he goes. There he goes. Okay. Oh, there goes number 2 and number 3. So, all right. So the little yellow truck is a little bit farther behind. If there's any reason for that, he goes and checks. But that lets us know it's going well. You can go on to the next one, Catherine. And don't run this animation on the next one, but we can also take a look at how a whole brush crew is going. Now, a brush crew is made up of a rotaboom truck, the one with that grapple arm, and then 3 brush trucks that he can load into. And what he can do is he can follow how each of those are progressing as well as a team and keep up with them. And again, he can add or take away resources as the supervisor needs to make sure it gets done well. Another report that's really helpful to the supervisor is to compare the route map, which is how we designed the route to go, with how the guy is actually running it. If the driver is consistently getting in earlier or later, for example, than expected, he goes back, the supervisor goes back and says, well, he's supposed to start here and turn right and go left, and he follows that on the actual GPS thing and finds out that, oh, the route driver is doing it differently. Maybe that's why he's late, and then we have a counseling session and revamp the route as needed. So that helps us be a little more efficient as well. Next one. Reporting. Reporting is one of the really critical and key features of this GPS software that we have. Each day, each week, each month, we get reports on various factors. Now, this daily report tells how long the route took to run. In this case, about 7 hours and 15 minutes. That's about the right time. We want our routes to be run in 8 hours of driving time. So this one was a little more efficient. We can also say, in these tiny little numbers here you'll see over here, what the actual cost of running that route that day was, because we add up the fuel used, the cost of the vehicle, and the crew cost, and each of the supervisors and managers can then compare how efficient is this route compared with my other 12 routes, and do I need to rebalance or retrain my driver to get the highest efficiency out of them. Here's another report that we get. It's called the exception report for speeding. Now, all of my drivers drive the speed limit all of the time. No exception. But occasionally somebody gets a little out of whack. And when that happens, we get an automatic report from the system. In fact, it'll send a little digital message to the supervisor's cell phone if he's asked to do that, and it'll let him know which driver is on what speeding, and then, of course, he calls up to find out what the reason for that is. Normally, we see no speeding issues, but occasionally we do. And again, we get customer calls that say, I saw such and such a truck just barreling down Northwest Highway and knocking people over. And GPS helps us go back to check and see if that was the case. And if it is, of course, we take action. Another GPS report we get are exceptions about long idle time. Idling is, you know, we don't get the job done if we're parked. So we want to be cautious about how that's going. A 30-minute idle, for example, on this truck drew our attention. Well, it turns out this was one of those brush loading trucks, and there was this location on Fordham Road just had a lot of brush to be picked up. It took 30 minutes to load it. That makes sense. A second report we get is extended stops. Again, we don't want to be stopped. We want to be rolling. And this 42-minute stop was on Ledbetter. It just happened to coincide with KFC Taco Bell, so we knew the guy. And the time of day was 11:32. We knew what was going on there. That was good. But again, we'll get an alert. If the driver is idling or stopped for an extended period, it sends a note to the supervisor, and he checks to find out if there was mechanical difficulty or something else. Very helpful that way. Now, what are our supervisors saying about GPS? Well, most of them find it to be a terrific tool. Some of them find it challenging because they haven't been used to using a computer every day to help them in their job. But the more they use it, they're finding, hey, this makes my job easier and I can keep up with my guys better. It also helps them reinforce the very basic parts of the rules for our drivers, which is stick to your route, follow the traffic signals and speed limits, and check in with me by radio because I'm going to check in with you if I think something's askew. It also helps us use our resources, both the manpower and the trucks, much more efficiently, and so we think we're going to get savings in that area. One of the things that the supervisors have asked is whether they could get one of those computer laptops installed in their pickup trucks so that when they're in the field, and they need to spend 6 hours a day in the field looking at how their guys are doing and talking to the customers. So could they get these laptops installed in their trucks and try that because they can be more effective being in the field and checking that way. And we've just now started installing some of those, so it looks like that's going to work out well. We also got feedback from the field staff, who, by the way, were initially very, very skeptical about the value of GPS. It felt like Big Brother watching them, and they know how to do their job. They don't need that. But we got some input from the field employees' morale team in sanitation, and I'm very happy to say that the morale team is represented here today. If you guys would just stand for a moment. That's Mac Middleton in the back row. He's the chair. This is Ollie Thompson. He's the immediate past chair. Ed Tripp Betts and Mr. Black is here. Paul Black. Thank you. There, I got it. And they're here. They're four of the representatives of the 15-member morale team who gives us feedback every month on how we're doing and how we can do what we do better. So at first they said, we're not liking this idea. Now they're saying, this looks like a pretty darn good idea. We are more effective in the field. And we think that the savings that we're seeing that the department is acquiring from GPS can be used very effectively to help us do our jobs even better than that by focusing on safety. We all know how dangerous our jobs are. We take a look at how many accidents we might have a year, how many injuries we have, and reinforcing the safety motto is absolutely important to us. So they have recommended that we use some of our savings, and I agree with them, to have recognitions on safety, to have safety awareness training sessions improved, and we're aiming for that. And then they may speak to that a little bit later. Well, let's find out if we really are getting the savings first. Is it paying for itself is the question. We estimated that the cost of the 3-year contract, which was almost $700,000, would be paid back over 3 years in savings for overtime and fuel reserves. In fact, we would probably make a little bit more than the 3-year cost of the contract. On our next slide, we're going to say, is it doing it? Sure. It absolutely is doing it. In fact, in just the first year, in just year one savings, we've made back almost as much as the 3-year cost of the contract. So we're pretty pleased that the overtime reduction we expected to see is happening and that the fuel cost usage, or actually the fuel usage, which means our cost, is also coming down. So we're pretty tickled about that. Lastly, what are we going to do with GPS now that we've decided it's working okay? Well, we want to keep using it. It's going to be our recommendation that it become part of our budget every year and that we just fold that in. Secondly, we do think that we will allocate some of the savings to safety issues for the department. And safety incentives are hugely important to keeping that message of being safe every day fresh in the minds of our drivers. And we want to use it also in some other areas of our service. We have dead animal collection and brush bulk that can be benefiting from this, as well as other departments who have, as you've heard from the fleet description, many, many vehicles, and they may find that they have usage for it as well. So I'm happy to report it's working. We're happy, and I'd be happy to take any questions you have.
Terrific. Mary, thank you very much. Appreciate this. As a little bit of background, this was one of those things that was actually delayed. There were several, it was a split vote, so there were several objections to it. And Mary, I just appreciate you bringing it back, because as was said at the outcome, it was something that clearly was going to produce some cost savings for our taxpayers. As you pointed out, a one-year payback, and there's not a whole lot of things that you can do, especially their technology and asset base, that are going to produce a one-year payback. And I think the other thing, and you pointed out in the last couple of slides, is we're going to find out that with the technology, you can find a lot of additional uses of it, even within sanitation, as people get used to doing it, plus then other departments will find the applicability for it. So I just want to, at the outset, say congratulations. I know some of the members of our staff are going to make some comments. They have indicated to me that they're very supportive of what's happened. They're very supportive of what you've done to do on it. It was one of those things where I'm sorry it took as long. I'm sorry there were objections to it, because the reality of it has saved money. There is no large producer of fleets and kind of fleet operations that hasn't gone to this sort of investment for the very same reasons that you've outlined. And finally, I know it felt like you were pulling teeth at some time just to get the approval. But nevertheless, I'm glad of your perseverance, because it's really made a difference for our city, so we appreciate that. With that, Mr. Carraway?
Thank you, Mayor. Mary, you know, nothing beats a failure but a try. And as Mayor said, you stepped forward. It was delayed. Now that we have stepped out on the limb, it has proven to be worthy. You know, I was one of the last ones that wanted to keep the two-day trash pickup, and I was applauded by my colleagues when I finally came across and agreed to the one-day service, once a week. I now kind of wonder if I'm living in the same house, because the two-day was very convenient. I was afraid to try the once a week. But now I have seemed like I have less trash to take out even once a week, and that's in conjunction with the recycle. So I only say that and give that scenario because where we may have been afraid of the GPS or a little, you know, standoffish about it, now it has proven to be something that's effective and saving us. I'd like to go back to slide six or seven, and those little dots on the right,
yes.
When the GPS is activated on the morning that the truck pulls out, there are no dots at all?
That's right.
Okay, so start off with no dots.
That's right. So this is right here. See that tiny little car right there?
Right.
What that is that the driver heading down to the transfer station. So
okay.
He's already been up here, and all these dots indicate now it's nearly 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay, so but it's not a dot until he passes that the supervisor sees.
That's right.
All right, and then that tells the supervisor, well, he missed your street when a citizen called.
Right.
Gain an understanding about it. So that's a good thing. And it also tells us, as you've already so stated, that if someone is finishing early and there's a need to go and help in another area, who's available to be dispatched to another part of the city. And now, the supervisor himself, do we have them, are they watching the screen? Is that their job description of the day when the truck's out, they're sitting there watching the screen?
In fact, their jobs would be such a drudge if that were the case. In fact, what they tend to do is check the screen
right. Periodically
through
okay.
the day. And so, because again, they're in contact with their drivers by radio off and on, but rather than be by radio, which is the sort of blind way of keeping up with your drivers, now they have eyeballs, And when they need to, they can see what's progressed.
Now, and speaking of radios, and I'll say that lightly, the radios are in every truck and
every
vehicle with the GPS.
That's right.
All right, and then we have the ability to communicate directly to the inside of that truck to give direction.
That's correct.
And then the supervisors are using their cell phones.
Supervisors can use cell phones, and we have that some that are paid for by city stipends. But each supervisor also has a radio at their headquarters that they can use and in their own pickup truck.
Now, will those, and again, I'm trying to tread this little light, but will those radios transform into the new system as we move forward, and those trucks will have to be reinstalled with new radios?
Well, we examine that, Ms. Carey, we examine that every time we procure new equipment, whether we should get a system that has either a handheld or a built-in GPS and radio system. And CIS has come up with several options. We're just examining them all now.
Now, and I guess, Mary, with the GPS, are there other fleets that do not have them that we might need to have them in there? Because if we're saving here and it's been proven.
Well, this is a very routinized process. And the results you get from this are going to be probably the best place to get results. But other department directors, Mary said this presentation to them, and we're beginning to look to other places. Yeah.
Can we put one in Stephanie's first? Well, don't say I keep hearing
no,
it.
No, no. I love Stephanie.
You love Stephanie. She knows my sick. All right. Thank you very much,
thank
Mary.
You,
and Mary, your flower, your corsage looks so well. Do you put this corsage on for your presentations, or are you down in sanitation like this every day?
No, I'm styling every day.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you very much. Mr. Dinsky, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Carraway, Stephanie's already sent me an email. She would like one put on your car. This was her first. Great presentation, Mary, especially when, you know, you got to the last page and found out that not only did we get our payback in the 3 years that you promised us, we got it back in 1 year. About how much money did that save us for years two and three?
I'm sorry, how much will it? We're just finishing year one officially.
No, but you paid for it in year one.
We paid for it in year one.
Operational costs each year. So how much will we be ahead for years two or three if nothing else changes?
Of the $677,000 of savings in this past fiscal year,
right?
We had already guaranteed that we would save $230,000 of it. So that is about $440,000. Additional savings in this past year. We'll see that again in the following year, we expect. Now, you didn't...
440 plus 440.
Yeah, 440
okay,
and 440.
That's the number I'm looking for. All right, so we'll save about $900,000
over the next
2 years with the same investment that we've already paid for.
That's our expectation.
You know, I'll give... You know, Mr. Newman mumbled over here, this is like making money. You know, we should maybe buy another one, but I don't know what else we would do with it. But if we can invest that kind of money in produce those kind of savings, that's kind of what we want to make. You know, you and I had a particular incident where this proved its value, where a citizen called and said we've been missing his recycling for 3 weeks. Of course, the first question was, why didn't he call in week one? But he waited 3 weeks, and the GPS system proved that the driver, for some reason, the substitute driver didn't realize that alley was there. My question is, when you had the little racing dots there that remind me of Pac-Man, is the system capable of having an input of where the pickups are supposed to be versus where they've been?
Can you return to that slide, Catherine, that shows the route?
I guess what I'm saying is, if you have a house on 123 Main Street, does the system know that there is a pickup to be made there?
No, the system does not do that. No, it doesn't have a thing where you can, as it goes by, it goes bing, you picked up where you're supposed
right.
to.
Is that something the vendor is thinking about in the future? It would seem to me that the preponderance of your customer service calls are, gee, you missed me today.
Yes.
Which a large number of them proved to be the citizen didn't put the garbage out early enough, the truck came and went.
Yes.
So from a proactive perspective, now that we've got these results, it would seem maybe the next step would be if the ones that were inadvertently missed popped up a different color, and also provides you with a way to show the citizen that when they call in, yes, we were at your house this morning at 7:35. Trash wasn't,
you know, that isn't an idea that I've heard from our vendor, but that's worth pursuing with them. I'll talk with them about
in
that.
In this particular case, it wouldn't have taken 3 weeks to realize that through an error, there was a kind of, you know, circuitous alley that just was not getting picked up. And that way, at the end of the day, the supervisor would be able to notice that a lot quicker.
You bet.
You talked about the lunchtime thing. Do they get a lunchtime, though? I mean,
they do have a break for lunch, yes,
okay,
absolutely.
So the fact that the driver was at that restaurant is not a problem.
No, 45-minute break is appropriate.
Know where they are.
Time of
okay.
day.
And I would assume the issue with the idling that you brought up, if there's other inadvertent idling, especially during the non-idling period that we have in the city, we wouldn't want the city trucks to violate that, would we?
We do not want them to do that. And they are absolutely all informed and educated on that fact.
All right. No, I think this is a good investment. It's one of those deals where you present something to us and we take a shot at it, and you've proved that it's a smart thing for us to do. And I would also follow up on the comment that was made earlier about looking at other specific departments in the city area where this may be. It doesn't mean that it's going to work everywhere, but take a look at it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
And you guys out here.
Thank you, Mayor. Go to page 18. The mayor is looking at applying to employees' safety and sanity. And I was speaking to one of your safest people this morning, talking about incentives. Mary, could you tell us on our fleet with accidents, how much it costs us probably in the last 5 years?
We can get the data for you, yes.
So what I'm asking is, for the last 5 years, last 10 years, is there any type of incentives that people who drive the sanitation truck, the trash truck, or whatever, that how can we award them, give them some type of sanity if they do not have an accident within 1 year or 2 years or whatever, and find out what it costs you. If it costs a million of dollars, you know, a saving, we're not giving them some type of incentive. We should be able to give them something. That might be a way that for the GPS, what we're doing with the drivers.
In fact, the department uses a form of a task pay that has several criteria, including have you had an accident, have you had any other incidents during this month, and drivers who are accident free, who are on time, who are not in any reprimand situation, get $100 a month extra for having accomplished that. Now, what we would like to do, and I think that's an important incentive for our drivers, but what we'd like to do, is, as you're suggesting, is match that up with what the cost of a accident is, and if it needs to be adjusted.
Well, and that's what I'm talking about with a GPS, you know, on looking at that, you know, last year, you know, how many accidents did we have, and since we self-insured, how much did it cost for last year?
Right.
Year before, how much did it cost? Is it keep going up, whatever? Then those drivers is the one who is responsible for the vehicle and saving us money, and those money could be the savings back to the bottom line.
I agree.
So, Mary, how soon would it take for you to get...
Oh, it'll take a while.
What is the while, the final while, please?
You better give me several months. That's a lot of detail.
And I think, you know, we got a tight budget. It's something we can look at, and we can forecast down the road and see that over the last three to five years, did we save any money, the accident go down, and we can incentivize going forward in the future how much you're going to save down the road, you know. I'm just looking at this budget. It's going to be a tight budget, you know, every penny going to count. And I still believe that we're talking about a budget is number one, that I think the citizens and the employees of the city of Dallas, you know, they got to be more upbeat, you know, to be more caring about the city property and caring about the customer service to the citizens. You know, if you're trying to save money, they also got to be happy also. They got to be incentivized also. So I think we need to look into that, Mayor. Thank you very much.
Thank you
very much. Mr. Newman, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I mentioned this offline and to Ryan and Mary, and I'll say it again publicly. You're doing a superior job, Mary, and I very much appreciate it. Over and over, Mary, I hear from my constituents of how responsive sanitation recycling is to issues of missed pickups, issues related to neighborhood recycling. 2 years ago when we put recycling in the Keystwood area in my district in Oak Cliff, and how well that went. So you are 5 stars in my book. So thank you, first and foremost. I mean that sincerely. And you are styling today. I love it. A year ago, 2 years ago, when we talked about this GPS system, I was outspokenly for this. I'm very pleased that you came back, Madam Manager, with this today. Slide 17, please. I like the top right-hand corner answer to the question, yes, absolutely. This is what it's all about. This goes back to making sure we're cost-effective, making sure that we're responsive to the taxpayers. Now, sanitation is not paid by the general fund, but it's paid for by the users, and those are property owners, citizens who use our services, and so this is a very positive reinvestment, and so I'm very pleased about this. I mentioned to Joey Zapata behind me, is he still here?
He is.
That we should consider something like this for code compliance as well. It's different situation, different complexity. I understand that sort of thing. But I think this is a very positive productivity tool. As long as the management team is using it constructively with our employees, then it has a positive outcome. And that sounds like what I'm hearing thus far. Yes, Mary?
That's absolutely right.
Okay. So it's cost saving. It's positive. Manager-employee relationship. As long as those are working in tandem, this is very good for our city. So
there's another plus to this that Mary mentioned, but I would like to emphasize. You're talking about safety, and you're talking about accidents and that sort of stuff. But our folks are out during the day many times by themselves. If something were to happen to them, knowing quickly that there was a problem with their safety is really important to us, and that
begs the question: is there a button? Is there a way that a vehicle with this axis in it can push a panic button or something?
Not in these. There isn't police, but what happens here is you could see is if this doesn't stay on schedule, somebody's saying why is it not moving? Why is it not on schedule? They get a warning, so. I just don't want people to miss the fact that our folks that are by themselves out in the community doing things that are sometimes enforcement that you don't think about except for police.
Well,
face some challenges.
I mean, I regularly refer to private sector because that's where I come from in running a small business for 20 some years, and this is an exact example of how we in government, part of our job, care and custody of taxpayers' funds. To do good investment. Yes, it was $700,000, but boy, we can see it's paying back in aces and in hearts and spades. So very much appreciated, Mary. Thank you for bringing this forward. We want more examples of cost-effective ways of running our city for our citizens. Thank you very much for your leadership and for your team. This is a positive thing. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mayor.
Ms. Hilton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Nix, thank you for bringing this report and evaluation back to us. You will recall that early and often I was a supporter of this idea from the very beginning and never wavered. I thought it was a good idea in the beginning, and it has proven to be a good idea. Thank you for that. There's a technique in law called polling the jury. I've heard your verdict that the field employees are now happy, but I want to poll at least one member of the jury. And that's the man in the blue hat. That man. I don't remember your name, but will you please...
Mr. Ollie Thompson.
Mr. Thompson, will you please stand up for me? Mr. Thompson, you were one of the most verbal and consistent opponents of this system. Ms. Nix is now telling us that you have changed your mind and you believe this works. Is that correct? That's all I need. Thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Thompson. I believe that says it all. Mr. Thompson was here every time he could be here. He was in the hall. He was, I think, on my street at my child's school talking about how this wouldn't work. If Mr. Thompson has changed his mind, this is a success. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
It does indeed, by the way, Ms. Hill, it does speak to the fact that staff is very open-minded. It's opinionated. They've also been open-minded, and they're very jazzed now about the success of it, and in fact have created, on their own, they created these buttons called ZAA for Zero Accident Attitude to share with the entire department. This is just a small reminder every day when they see this to be safe on the job. So
in fact,
I applaud
that. Why don't you show the
board?
Yeah, show the board real quick.
These gentlemen, they're so amazing. They've said, this is what we want to do. We want to start measuring and letting our guys see on measure, here's how safe we are going to be. So they've created this board that has every employee name in that district, and for each month, you're going to get a green star if you are if you had no accident. You get a blue dot if you had an incident, but it was caused by outside you. So we've got October, November, December filled in, and as those guys start racking up those green stars, they're going to have an incentive and a reward for having had months and months of no accidents.
Yeah, that's
very
a great job. And really kind of the cooperation between the staff and between the management for us.
Fantastic.
Appreciate
it.
Thank you very much. Okay. Mr. Garner.
Thank you, Mayor. Mary, thank you very much, and I was a supporter from the beginning on this as well, and I know that there's praise for you all the time. She's on my speed dial. But I wanted to ask, on the if there is a missed pickup due to, say, maybe a car that's parked in front of maybe the roll cart, and they see it, they just can't somehow or another pick them up, maybe bulk trash or something. Is this, do they call on the radio to say, you know, unable to pick up this bulk trash due to, you know, parked vehicles? Or, and I think Mr. Matinsky asked a similar question, if for some reason parked vehicles are there and they didn't see the roll bins, the roll carts, are you able to, supervisor able to go back and say, yes, it was missed?
Yeah, often that's the case, Ms. Medrano, is if there's an obstacle and the driver notices and can't get around it, he reports it to the supervisor. And we may dispatch a guy to talk to, the supervisor to talk to the resident. We may dispatch a different truck that can get in there. Sometimes we miss it because we didn't see it.
Right.
And when the resident calls, and we do encourage using 311 for missed service calls or for any issue, but for certainly missed service, because our turnaround time when we get that 311 call is usually within 24 hours.
Okay, that's good to know. I, for one, would like to know when there was the screen that said future question mark on the different, just to follow up with the recognition program, what else are we going to do?
Well, in fact, the morale team is working right now on incentives that they know best.
Sure.
What is going to be an incentive for them, and then we're working together on how much of the budget can be allocated for that and how we're going to get the best out of it. So I think you'll hear back from the morale team sometime in the future about what our safety program is shaping up to be.
Well, I think it all pays off when our citizens are happy with the one day Dallas program, and so I think that pays off. Number two, on page 14, you said that mobile laptops have been or will be installed in supervisors' trucks.
Yeah, I have 36 supervisors, and five of them now have the mobiles, and we're looking to, you can't do everything all at once, it turns out. So we're starting to ease into that, and I think we want to make sure they're very effective before we use them throughout all the districts.
Question. Will the GPS be installed in the supervisor's truck?
Oh, yeah, it's in every truck. Every single vehicle that sanitation owns or operates has GPS in it. So the vehicle that I bring down here to City Hall has GPS in it.
Okay. And then just a follow-up question to that, I just wanted to make sure that we're utilizing the system as efficiently as possible, even in the supervisor's truck, because I think that there was a question at one point, and maybe the employees had pointed this out, that even if they were on a route and then something was missed,
that if it was something small, that if the supervisor was closer to it, then they could actually, you know, either pick up that bag, the garbage bag, and do that. I just want to make sure that that's being utilized.
Yeah, normally that's the case. And often our driver, even though he sees an obstacle, a truck or something in his way, will pull up, park the truck, bring the roll cart over, and then empty it if it's an automated truck.
Okay.
I think we only miss when we don't even see the roll cart out there.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, I had the opportunity to kind of be a replacement for Mary on a state board, and I can tell you that she is really highly respected. I have been unsolicited. The people that are in all sorts of solid waste management came up to me and told me how terrific you were, and then gave me your whole life history. So, anyway, and I concur with everybody that has said that today. I think she's a superior manager, and we're very appreciative to have you. And we're also appreciative to have all the guys and gals that work with the sanitation department. We appreciate that every day. And my sanitation guy that comes by my house, which was yesterday, he always waves and smiles, and I'm sure he doesn't know who I am, but I think that's the face.
I think
maybe
I'll
about that.
Big red light blinking.
Yeah, maybe so, but you'd be surprised. Maybe that's not the case, because I've had my trash missed a couple of times, and the guy is just really a terrific guy. So anyway, that being said, question about can that computer application do? You know how in UPS how they always make right turns. What a huge part of their efficiency is, they're always turning right. I mean, they've computerized their route maps, and they're always making right turns.
Mm-hmm.
It's more efficient to make a right turn. It's faster to make a right turn. You never get, the traffic is less, and so on and so forth. And so they computerize their maps, and the great efficiency is doing that. Can this do that, or do you need that?
We actually set up, before we bought the GPS, we set up our routes with a separate software called Route Smart. To do exactly that, to minimize any left-hand turns, to minimize crossing of this, and to maximize the safe turns. What this does is allows the supervisor to compare, is he following the route without having to actually follow the truck in the field. So this helps us a lot on making sure, again, we do the safest things we can every day we're out.
Okay, and that's interesting to know that you have a program that actually picks out the most efficient route using the right-hand turn.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Davis.
Thank you. Mary, I want to first thank you for what you're doing. I went to one of the basketball games, and you guys have a meditation basketball crew. And it was over at the Juanita Craft, and I think that's good morale to have that basketball team. You did a tour with me in District 7, and I want to kind of piggyback on what Ms. Madrona is talking about, the small bucket trash. After you pick up the big bucket, people tend to put out small things back out in certain areas. Can we look at something to have those individual items picked up? Will it be the supervisor who will go back and pick those items up? Or will you guys look at something else?
Yes, when we did the tour of your area, you were looking for a sort of an additional service to come back around for those who missed, but they missed setting it out on time,
mm-hmm.
or just had a little extra. And we'll estimate what the cost might be to do that,
okay.
both by a district and by citywide, and see if there's some value to it. Otherwise, what we do is we get calls from the citizen that said this is out and it's out of cycle, and after code identifies that, we'll go pick it up.
Okay, and I said that because when, like the other day, someone put something out, and you guys just had picked
just
it up.
In there, yeah.
I had them to remove it. Because they'll start a pile there, and it becomes a huge pile. But Mary, I want to say, I think working with bucket trash and coal works hand in hand. In my district, I'm seeing a lot of improvement. We still have a long way to go. So I think with bucket trash and coal working together, I think it has helped some parts of District 7, especially in that South Dallas Fair Park area. I do have some pockets that still needs some work done to it, meaning with some bucket trash and some coal. and I will be touring with Code on Thursday, and we can start talking about those areas. But I think your team has done a wonderful job in picking up most of that bucket trash. Before we started this, the bucket trash was everywhere in the South Dallas proper. And now, if I ride down some streets, I don't see the bucket trash as much. I think a little of that has to do with education. I think a little of it has to do with you having your team to come out more, picking up the trash more. I still have some problems, but I'm going to get through those problems. But I just want to thank Cole and your team, Paul and all of those guys who live mostly in my district, District 7. I just want to thank them for all the hard work that they've done to make sure that we can do a better job of getting the bucket trash up on time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mary, again, thank you very much. It was the right idea, and on top of that, you implemented it in the right way, as indicated by the comments we received earlier. So thank you very much for all the involvement from the folks that are here. We appreciate that. Mary, appreciate all your work. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Madam Secretary, let's go to our afternoon speakers.
Thank you. We begin your afternoon speakers with Michael Penderhughes. Michael Penderhughes is not present. Latonia Elliott, not present. Robert Cicciarelli, not present. Trina Trish, not present. William Hopkins, not present. Leslie Allen Davis, not present. Gwayne Wooten, not present. DJ Mayfield, not present. That concludes your speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. It is now 12:22 on January 5th. The City Council will now go into a closed session under Section 551.071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act. Receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters that are described on today's agenda. Grand Homes versus Dallas, Jones and Jones versus Dallas, United States of America versus Texas, legal issues involving general counsel position at DFW Airport, applications for specific use permits for gas drilling and oil, and gas lease dated February 27, 2008 between the City of Dallas and XTO. And then oil and gas lease dated February 27, 2008 between the City of Dallas and XTO. So why don't we do this? Let's break for lunch. We'll go down into the briefing room. We'll go right into, so take 5 minutes, but then we'll go right into the executive session.